It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, is here. Jason Calacanis from Inside.com. And from The Register, Ian Thompson will talk about the transfer of the Twitter accounts, the final days of the tech surge, and a friend of ours who now has a pretty big job keeping the government techie. Plus, what's going on with Apple and Qualcomm? It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Twit This Week in Tech, episode 598, recorded Sunday, January 22nd, 2017. It's probably squirrels. This Week in Tech is brought to you by NatureBox delicious snacks made from high-quality ingredients. Eat well and feel better. Visit naturebox.com/twit to save 50% on your first order. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million small business owners. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/twit. And by Boll & Branch. For a good night's sleep, try their ultra-soft, 100% organic cotton sheet sets. Get $50 off your first set of Boll & Branch sheets and free shipping by visiting bollandbranch.com and enter the offer code TWIT. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/twit2. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news. Hey, it's nice once in a while we get one of our own hosts sitting at the table, Father Robert Ballester. Has deigned to join us. Good to see you.
It's great to be back.
Host of NorHow and This Week in Enterprise Tech.
Yeah. It's my job to make sure we have lots of stuff floating around the studio that could kill you.
I notice you're still growing things.
Yes. Yeah. Well, growing is a very loose term. I put them into automated devices, and I'm kind of wondering how long it will take for them to die.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So they get watered and light and everything.
They get watered and light, but they're being very much abused at the moment.
There was a whole segment of NorHow that was called GrowHow. And he was showing us how to grow, herbs.
Like herbs.
Yeah, green things.
Hey, that's Jason Calacanis. Great to see you again, my friend.
Good to be here. Good to
from,
be here.
From Inside.
Inside.com is my current startup, yeah. And of course, 14 newsletters and growing.
The newsletters are great. Now, do you still do the SMS newsletter? Did that work out or no?
It's just an experiment. I call it jasonstxtlist.com, and 1,300 people are on it. And what I said was, I have 100,000 emails over here. Let me see if any of them want to just get very personal thoughts over SMS. The interesting thing is very few people unsubscribe. I have to do something really interesting if I send it. And
how many a day do you end up sending?
I send maybe two or three a week. Okay. So it's a very personal thing that I don't want to deal with shenanigans on Twitter about. So I kind of privatize my Twitter.
But it is Twitter-like, isn't it?
It's short, but it's 1% of your audience, 100% open rate.
Right.
And it's the most intimate
communication. Give me an example.
Well, today I was talking about one, I just let people know that I was listening to Shoe Dog and I loved it. And what other books are you interested in? And then another one was, I was just saying, I'm thinking about buying these modular homes and putting it on a lot somewhere. And I was wondering if anybody had done a development project.
So it is very much like Twitter.
It is, but it's stuff that I don't necessarily want in the public that the press would pick up on, or that would be a permanent record.
Interesting.
One to few.
But every time you're here, we have great conversations. You just told me about John Mayer performing with the Dead and how great that was. And I watched a video. So I learn a lot. Every time you're here, I get some of that value.
It's nice.
So I can see why people would subscribe to that. Also here from
theregister.co.uk,
a good friend, Sir Ian Thompson.
Not quite. Somehow I doubt Her Majesty's going to be noting me anytime soon.
So. I loved Sir Ian McKellen marched in the London March yesterday.
Indeed.
And his poster, and people thought it was shopped, but there were enough images of it that I think it was real, was of his good friend, Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
With his famous face palm.
Face palm.
Yeah. And that's all. No words. Just
So he was trolling him.
It was wonderful. I thought it was really, really.
I saw them in a play together.
Yeah, they're good friends, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're very good friends, and they
pal around a lot.
Yeah, he's done a lot of interesting work on that one. I'm sure he was inwardly quite pleased to be carrying
to be able
around.
To do that. Yeah. So there was obviously we don't have to talk around it on Friday the really important peaceful transition of Twitter accounts, and and it didn't go completely smoothly.
Not so much, no.
But so just to recap. At POTUS, President of the United States, was created, was it last year? Of course, President Obama, president at the time, was using it. And always the intent was, and they even said this at the beginning, this is not Obama's account, this is the office's account. And so the Secret Service said, now, Mr. President, would you please start using POTUS? They took Obama's tweets and moved them to POTUS 44
permanent
and archived
record.
It. Yeah, he can't tweet any more to it. It's done.
And he can't edit it.
It's done. It's as it should be. And I think this is the case of a lot of almost everything that goes on in the White House. It becomes matter of public record at some point. But what's interesting is the Secret Service took away Trump's Galaxy phone. We don't know exactly what kind of Galaxy, as they did with Obama. And they gave him some sort of secure phone. We don't know what it is.
Now, did they really take it away from him or just say put it in your drawer?
Well, with Obama, I think he was really forbidden. And this is the interesting question. I mean, you're the president of the United States. Who can say anything to you? But I guess the Secret Service probably can.
They're the people who shadow you with guns. It's probably a good idea to listen to them because their responsibility is to keep you alive.
Heads of state, be it the president or the pope, always have people who have been in that job longer. They know all the details and all the dirty parts. And they get to call the shots, believe it or not. It's not like being a CEO of a company. If you're CEO of a company, you really can't do anything within that company. Mm. But like,
well, he's not the boss.
He's not.
He works for us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
I think
that
becomes very clear at some point, right?
Well, I mean, if you look at Saturday versus Friday, Friday was the inauguration, Saturday was the Women's March. I mean, I think the fifth largest Women's March was bigger than the inauguration crowd, right? So, and that occurred across the country. What's very interesting about the Trump situation is, one of the big concerns with Trump is that his brand and his name are one and the same. He has all these hotels and obviously his double dealing and all kinds of real estate projects around the world that he is going to benefit from being president. And he hasn't put everything in a blind trust. He's got it in his son's trust, although that's pretty close to being blind in my mind.
Actually, he's done nothing. He said he was going to do all of this.
No,
he's done nothing.
None of it.
But here's the interesting thing.
But let's stick to the tech on this.
You know, on the tech, he is going to gain at least 20, maybe 50 million followers.
You talked to us on the CNBC.
Yeah, and that's worth a dollar or $2 each. There is a quantifiable value to Twitter followers. When marketers pay for Twitter followers, there's a way in the ad network
multiple.
There to say, you can just say, I want to gain followers. I'm willing to pay a dollar. I'm willing to pay $2. So when he gains 20, 30, 40 million people, he's going to be making, let's say, $20 to $100 million asset, which when he gets out of office.
But he can't take at POTUS with him. And so this is one of the interesting things. I was told that along with taking the phone, they said, and Mr. President, you must now tweet at POTUS and not real Donald Trump.
That's not happening.
And that did not happen.
That's not going to happen at all.
That did not happen. So he continues to tweet at both, although at POTUS, which has 14.2 million followers, seems to be the kind of tweets that came during the campaign from the iPhone, during the day, the staffer tweets.
Yes, and then there was the 5:30
in the morning
tweets.
Because there's no spelling errors, right? That tipped it off.
Well, there was a spelling error on this one originally. I am honored to serve you was
misspelled
with N-E-R.
No, wait a second.
But fixed.
Is he... So does that mean he actually is – the president is literally writing his own tweets?
Some
or
of them,
the people who work for him are incapable of using spell check?
They say that any tweets that he writes will be signed DT.
I don't think that's true. I'm looking at real Donald Trump.
Yeah,
I see no signature at all.
No, no, no. Only on the POTUS account. Okay. So on the POTUS account, if there's anything that actually comes from him, it'll be signed
DT. Is it to be presumed that real Donald Trump, then these are his tweets?
Well, then there were somewhere he said that he would read them out to a staffer and they would write them. Hmm. But then it's like you have a staffer there at 3 a.m.?
Does this new phone, because remember when Obama got a phone in 2013, a couple of years ago, he complained on the Tonight Show, it doesn't play music, it doesn't take pictures, it doesn't do any of the things a normal smartphone would do. He said, it's your child, it's a kid, it's a play phone.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if it would tweet.
As long as you've got a browser on there, though, you can access Twitter.
Well,
it
does not have a browser.
I
do not believe it has a browser.
A device that's designed for secure communication should never touch an insecure network.
Precisely. Right.
And that's
so it doesn't go on the public internet, or right. if it does, it goes through a filter.
Something that makes sure that he's not getting fished, farmed, whatever.
So I just, I wonder, maybe he did keep the Galaxy in a drawer and he's pulling it out. I yeah. don't know what's going on. But clearly he's still tweeting on Real Donald Trump, which has considerably more followers, 21.5 million followers. Mm. There was also a little kerfuffle because for a while, and Twitter says it was about 50,000 people, were auto-followed to @POTUS.
Oh, it was yes. more than 50,000.
Well, that's a lot of people. Twitter yeah. said it was 50. It seemed like it must have
well,
been
because when they moved over the account, POTUS had 14.5 million. It had dropped to under 14 million. Then it went up to 14.5. Then it went down to 14.1. Now it's stabilized at 14.2.
Because people were unsubscribing in anticipation of Trump taking it.
Right.
Right.
Therefore, when they did the migration, some of those people who had unsubscribed
were resubscribed.
Right. Also known as no big deal.
NBD, yeah. right.
Well,
right.
it's a button. You could push
Twitter,
it.
Exactly.
They were replaying the script. They were essentially going back to a backup,
okay.
removing all the tweets, okay. yeah. and then saying, okay, we're going to replay. It took a while to replay
Jack
that script.
Jack Dorsey yeah. apologized. And,
I know. It's no,
it wasn't intentional, in other words.
And who cares? I mean, it's, yeah.
this well, is, I would we, care if Twitter were throwing its hat in the ring and saying, well, you all ought to follow Donald
right,
Trump.
Right, but it was people who had
but
previously.
But it was just an accident.
Yeah, it's just an yeah. accident. All I mean, right. people are so quick on Twitter and in other places to sort of ascribe some sort of agenda. When in fact, almost all of Twitter's behavior comes out of just their utter incompetence, right? Like,
is there anybody left at Twitter? They've lost, what, well, 8 or 9 of the top executives this year?
They lost everybody. And if you have a halftime CEO, and listen, Jack's a friend of mine, or acquaintance slash friend of mine. I consider him, we're friendly. I don't want to be critical of Jack, but it is a horrible idea to...
Yeah, because somebody's going to tweet him if you say anything bad.
Well, anyway, whatever. I mean, he knows my position, which is, you know, a halftime CEO of a troubled company.
Yeah.
And...
So he doesn't really step down at Square. He's still running Square.
Yeah, and now we're 6 quarters in. I mean, I think the halftime CEO experiment's going to end in the next 60 to, you know, whatever, 180
The board's transformed too, though, right? It's not the same board.
They transferred some of the board, but, you know.
Isn't that who would then force Jack to step down?
I think, you know, again, the incompetence level on the board as well is just so bad, like. It's really run improperly.
What happens to Twitter? I mean, it's clearly, we just spent 20 minutes talking about the president's Twitter account. It's clearly an important medium.
It's important, but the only way to keep Twitter as an important medium is to basically guarantee that it's never profitable.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
This is the thing. It's going to get bought up by a bunch of venture capitalists.
Should it be
a
non-profit?
Sorry, and who are going to try and run it at a profit and kill it. Is the way I see it.
Should
I
mean, it be a non-profit?
It should there be a non-profit. Been,
what would you liken this to? A public utility?
This is like PBS back in the day. It was an important public service, actually even way more important than PBS, and it needs to stay free. It needs to stay more or less free-flowing. Yeah. The minute that someone figures out a really good way to monetize Twitter, it's no longer Twitter.
There is a security concern. Somebody just raised this. What happens when North Korea hacks the president's account and starts tweeting, and could they even create a war?
No.
Do people pay enough attention to this?
We've seen this before with the Syrian Electronic Army. They got hold of, it was AP's tweet, they put yeah. out there'd been a bomb attack in the White House, you got a flash crash, and it was straight back up again within a few minutes.
People understand
we can
this
be,
is fake.
I think people understand that it can be hacked, yeah. right? We have a pretty educated populace.
Yeah, but Trump's tweets, he's caused Boeing, Lockheed, he's cost a lot yeah. of companies
that's,
some,
that's
some
the
real
bigger
value.
Thing. Someone,
right.
someone hacks the account, and then they sell short on a company that they have
well,
the account.
What's, really interesting, caught, what's right. really interesting about yeah. the Lockheed case is, if you look at the pattern of share traffic, the Lockheed share price started to drop sharply about 5 minutes before that tweet yeah. went out.
You'll get
that
caught.
Was very
all
suspicious.
Kinds of interesting
You'll get
questions.
Caught real quick. I mean, the thing is,
yeah, insider trading is hard to get away with, right?
Because I think it pretty.
They know who bought the stock.
Yeah. The only thing you could really do is like take a long term view. So, okay, I'm going to load up on Twitter because I know it's going to get acquired, and I'm going to take a long view. But it's very hard to trade on that information. Now, what's interesting about Twitter, I think, is. Never before have we had as polarizing a politician as Trump. I mean, maybe Nixon. I don't know when the last time it was this polarized.
Nixon's pretty close.
Pretty close. I wasn't alive during it. Oh, so God, here's the thing. If Twitter can't grow meaningfully when the president of the United States is using it to start like and create chaos, When will they ever be able to grow?
Well, I think
like they can't capitalize on this.
If we had Ashton Kutcher, we'd be big.
You see, my worry isn't that
they can't capitalize on it.
They can't capitalize on it. It's crazy.
My worry isn't the president's going to use this. My worry is that somebody with access to that Twitter feed is going to use it and just ride on his coattails to do some kind of dodgy stuff. Because Trump's, honestly, I don't think going to risk the presidency on something as stupid as a little bit of insider trading.
I have to say, a lot of people were, I noticed, a lot of people in my various feeds were saying, were wanting to watch the march yesterday and watched on Twitter.
Yeah.
Mm. So there is a use case for live Twitter.
Twitter is an incredibly successful company that has been mismanaged for the last couple of years. It hasn't been managed for growth, and it's just gone sideways. And you just – you these companies are so competitive. If you look at how Zuckerberg runs his company, he is so competitive that to be – half-time CEO, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And I've been saying it from the beginning. Everybody else has been saying it. It was a mistake. And you
but
look
But what's going wrong at Twitter? They just can't monetize?
The product, Kate, no. They have plenty of revenue. They can't grow. The product is not getting easier to use. And their focus, there's no product cadence. What product cadence means in the technology space is that on a regular basis, you're getting nice updates. You see, you know, Facebook runs their FA conference, they run regular updates with their products.
Yeah.
Microsoft, Google, everybody's got regular updates. You don't get that sense as a Twitter user that there's any kind of rhyme or reason.
There's never a new invitation for a new generation of users or a new generation
and
of developers.
And they've got a very mature marketplace, and there's a limited number of people who are now looking to sign on and increase their numbers growth. So they've got a real problem. And every time they try and muck around with the actual service, the users throw up a complete stink. And they either back down or they wind it down. I mean, Facebook used to do this. They'd institute a change. The users would go, this is the worst thing ever. And then they started off rolling it back, and then they just decided, hell with it. We're going to do it anyway, and they can either go away or they can come along with us. And they come along with you in Facebook, by and large. I think Trump, you know, Twitter
could be
the
same. You do have to say that because of President Trump being on there, that's kind of going to guarantee Twitter continues.
Twitter is going to continue. I mean, these things take a long time to deprecate. So if you look at AOL or Yahoo, I mean, these brands still exist even today, even though they haven't done anything innovative in a decade. So it'll stick around.
Isn't Twitter pretty much perfect? Couldn't they just leave it the way it is?
I think.
They could. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to cut more staff, clean it up, and then sell it. And the only problem is Jack has, I think, a little bit of a strong grip on the board, and he wants to keep going. He wants to keep innovating. It's an ego thing for him. He's the founder.
You think we're in a Jerry Yang situation?
A bit. And I think, you know, somebody's got to just say to him, like, listen, you had 8 quarters. It didn't happen. Nothing happened.
Right.
It's time for us to sell this. Cut half the staff and sell. If Yahoo had cut half the staff at some point and focused
and
on their...
Who will buy this? Some venture capital?
Well, there's been
some,
a... there's been investor groups that have try to talk them into doing this, but they can't do it unless Jack and certain board members and key shareholders agree.
Right.
So there's plenty of people who want to privatize
it. Could you do a hostile takeover?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't think their float is big enough. The amount of shares available to the public is not big enough, and you have these private
They kept enough inside
so you really
that
have
you can't
to get
a majority stack.
Yeah.
Could Mexico buy Twitter?
Could Mexico?
Well, Carlos Slim could easily, but you know.
I mean, listen, at 20 or 30 billion, it doesn't feel like anybody wanted to buy it. But at 10 billion or 8 billion
there's
or 12
a price.
Billion,
there's a
lot of people who
so
would buy
it. You've got your angel hat on right now. How would you extract your money back out of Twitter if you had invested a large sum?
Well, I mean, people who were involved sold their shares to Chris Sacca, who ran syndicates of secondary shares all the way up. So that's how Chris Sacca made all his money. And he'll make his future thing on the Uber bet. But at the time, what he did was he put a pool of capital together, went to them and said, anybody who's an ex-employee, I'll buy your shares, or current employee, so you can get some liquidity and buy a house. That's when it was a billion-dollar company, $2 billion company. It ran all the way up to a $45 billion company. So
a lot of people got rich. A lot of people we know.
A lot of people did okay. Yeah, a lot of people did okay. So there's that ability to sell the shares. But I think that there is an opportunity. I know this sounds crazy. For somebody to create another social network that is based on privacy.
What?
And
it's not, we're not done?
No. No. Listen, Google was the 12th search engine, right? Or 13th search engine of note. So there's always an opportunity. I think that somebody could create a Twitter competitor if they did it based on mobile first and based in the same way Signal is, you know,
secure.
Encrypted and secure. Mm-hmm.
Would you have verified users?
I think you could go one of two ways. You can go only verified to be on the system so you get better behavior, or you could go complete free-for-all. We don't control anything. It's more like BitTorrent, or it's a little bit more open, and nobody controls.
You know, but why can't you combine those? Could work. Don't you fix most of the troll problem if everybody was verified? If you've got your actual identity in the game, you are much less likely to.
That's what stop, but it didn't stop Milo Yiannopoulos.
It won't stop some people, but I mean, you know who they are.
That's what they're moving towards. That. That's why they opened up the verification process. There has been a movement inside the company to go 100% verified. It was a very strong
movement.
Here,
last time you were here, you said that was going
to
happen.
And you saw it happen, right? They did say, we're going to open it up to everybody. You can request it. So I was right again. and it's easy to be right when people are feeding you information. But it's definitely, I think, eventually will happen is the default on Twitter will be verified people. So after a certain number of people tip over, they'll say, your experience is verified. And what I asked Jack to do, and what I told Twitter they should do, is when somebody has a flag on their account, too many complaints, like a Milo or something, when they come up and they want to harass you and they're like, hey, at Leo, hey, at Padre, you know, and it just should come up blurred. And it should say unverified user or controversial user.
Right.
It should be blurred. And then it says click to reveal. You click to reveal it and it automatically has a box there, block, you know, or report. Mm. So you're basically saying, you can get put in the penalty box if too many people complain, and the cost of being in the penalty box is your tweets are blurred. Then you have to approve people and say, in the future, I'll let this person tweet to me.
I don't think that solves the problem. That solves one part of the problem, which is you don't want to see trolls. But trolls can do you damage by the tweets that they say to other people. They can damage you.
Yeah.
And that doesn't change that situation at all.
But if let's say there's a triggering mechanism. 1,000 people who are qualified, verified people say this person is horrible. Then maybe they just move to every tweet they do
it's a tough thing
blurred.
To solve. I don't think that.
Well, Facebook did a good job of it by only having
it's all
real
authenticated,
users.
Supposedly.
So they
it does. It's dramatic the difference between Facebook and Twitter.
Because you can report people and then they go away. You can't really put up a fake account on Facebook. It's very hard to maintain.
It's much more work.
It's doable, but it is a little work.
You have to really make effort because every time you add somebody, if you don't know them, it's like, I don't know this person. This isn't a real person.
Right.
And they immediately get the signal.
Let's take a break. Come back with lots more to talk about, including a new chairman of the FCC, Apple suing Qualcomm for $1 billion.
Mm. Yum, yum.
And, lots more. We'll get to it in just a moment. But first, let's have snacks. It's snack time. We're going to do it early today. Nature Box, they've been our snack providers since 2010. We love Nature Box. What do you do when you want a snack, but all you can find is crap, junk food? Self-control, right? That works. Resist temptation.
Self-control,
no.
Self-control,
please.
Of that.
I've heard it. Never did it. What do? You eat the crap. Here's what you do. Instead, you have Nature Box handy, ready, and you're going to have wonderful snacks that taste great. They fulfill your need. Look at that Big Island pineapple. That is the best dried fruit in the history of the world. It's chewy and delicious. And garlic plantains? What the what? Cranberry almond bites? Whole wheat raspberry figgy bars? I'll never forget the day Sarah Lane ate an entire bag of those.
Mini Belgian waffles.
Oh, I love those. Those are really, really good.
Oh, yogurt covered pretzels.
They have always the high quality ingredients. Oh. Yeah, the sriracha.
Oh. Mm.
Free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners. If you've tried Nature Box before, they've changed it a little bit, and this is what I've wanted. You can order as much as you want, as often as you want. So they used to be a subscription. You'd get a box. It was complicated to get more. Now, no minimum purchase. Cancel any time. Get as much as you want. There are over 100 snacks. They always are refining it, always improving it based on, you know, they've got a lot of data. They know what people like. But one of the reasons is you can return a snack if you don't like it, and they'll replace it for free.
Mm.
That's their research,
no
right?
Risk.
No risk.
Zero
Toasted
risk.
Sesame sticks. And you could get those. Yeah, sure, you can go to the store and get them. They're not as good. They're not as good.
It's not as convenient.
Well,
you don't want to think about this.
Sea salt Pop-Pops.
Ooh, yum, yum.
Those are really... Okay, stop. Stop showing
salt
that. Stop showing
this. Salt and vinegar veggie
juice. Choose the snacks you want at naturebox.com/twit. We're going to give you 50% off your first order right now. Oh, come on. Now what's holding you back? Naturebox.com/twit. 50% off your first order. We thank NatureBox for their longtime support. They've been keeping us as snacks forever. NatureBox. So this is just a rumor. This has not yet been confirmed by the Trump administration, but there are several sources have reported to Politico that one of the current commissioners of the FCC, Ajit Pai, will become chairman of the FCC. As you know, the FCC was told don't make any more rules till the new administration comes in. It is up to the president to appoint the new commissioners. Half have to be Republican, half Democratic. We all already know that Tom Wheeler, who was an Obama appointee, is gone. And Ajit Pai is an interesting choice because he is already a commissioner. He does not need Senate approval. He can go right into the work. He was already confirmed. Now, that's just for the term. He would have to be reconfirmed when the new term comes up. Pai was a nominee by Obama. He is a Republican. He's, in fact, he's a senior FCC Republican. But here's the thing that I find interesting. He is a rabid anti-net neutrality, a fierce critic of net neutrality, of many regulations that the commission has passed over the last few years. Not just net neutrality, but a lot more. He will at least be acting chairman, I think, and we'll see if he becomes a more permanent chairman. But this has always been on the Trump plan to get rid of regulation, and in particular the net neutrality regulation.
Yeah, this basically just about wraps it up for net neutrality at the moment, because if you read what this guy's been writing for the last 3 or 4 years and the talks he gives to various think tanks about the way, net neutrality is out. Any kind of laws against conglomeration of broadband ownership, they're out. Of course, if you're trying to set up your own municipal network, that's out as well, because he's not a big fan of those. It has to be done by a corporate thing.
Wow. Did you see, by the way, speaking of municipal networks, the proposed bill in, I think it's Wisconsin or Minneapolis?
Oh, for the, you can't have a municipal network if you can get a 10 megabit per second connection through any means possible. So if you have a satellite downlink we can't have it's that just, kind of competition.
It's just, so there's already in many state legislatures and cities rules against cities setting up Wi-Fi, community broadband. I think it's a great idea, but I think the Republican point of view is that the public sector should not compete against private enterprise.
Well, hang on. What are they afraid of? Either one is either more efficient than the other. So
it goes back to the
competition.
It's the 86 Cable Act. So in the 86 Cable Act, in order to entice companies to come in and actually deploy, they basically said, we're going to give you the rights to set up connectivity across a municipality. However, there is a clause in there. It is part of the bill. It's not just an interpretation that says it needs to be for the betterment of the community. Unfortunately, it's so vaguely written that you can argue that locking you out of a faster connection is serving the betterment of the community. But, you know, looking at this whole thing, the net neutrality, the interesting part here is, yes, they could roll it back. They could get rid of the regulation. However, the hard part of setting up net neutrality the way that we had it under Wheeler was the reclassification. And it was the argument of whether or not that should be allowed. Even if they roll back the regulation, when the next administration comes across, if they are friendly to the net neutrality regulations, it's not going to be an 8-year fight. It's going to be a 2-month fight, because they're going to say the precedent is already there that this is possible. We can reclassify. And once we have the votes, we do. So this, you know,
ultimately it's Congress.
Yeah. Ultimately it's Congress.
No matter what.
And the hard part was already done.
Here's what Pai, he wrote in September. He wrote a digital empowerment agenda. So I'm just curious. We'll go through these points, but there's 4 points. What do you think? First, some of this I'd say great. Gigabit opportunity zones to bring broadband and digital opportunity to their most economically challenged areas. Create these zones that would incentivize broadband deployment. Spur local governments to streamline regulations, help job creators, in other words, help business, revitalize the neighborhoods. Any area where the average household income is below 75% of the national median would qualify. State and local lawmakers would adopt streamlined broadband deployment-friendly policies. Probably that's a euphemism.
Yeah.
Significant tax incentives. Entrepreneurs incentivized to create jobs in these zones through a tax credit. Sounds like a good thing, right?
Can't argue we'll see what the details that. Are. Yeah.
Mobile broadband for rural America. I mean, this is one of the things we've called for a long time. It's clear that businesses, one of the problems, of course, in this country is that a business is less incentivized to provide internet to a very low-density population, a rural population. There's not enough money to be made.
People are still on satellites.
So we've got to do something, in my opinion, like the rural electrification programs of the Depression. They did that to bring electricity to areas that would not be powered.
Yeah.
Let's bring broadband that way. He proposes increase the build-out obligations of wireless carriers and incentivize rural broadband investment by extending license terms up to 15 years. move forward with a mobility fund phase two that includes tech-neutral performance metrics, eliminates duplicative support. I don't even know what we're talking about. Maintains support where it's needed, mm-hmm. subsidizes the deployment of new networks, create a rural dividend. So basically, incentives.
This is a copy of the plan they tried to implement in the early 2000s when they gave the telco industry $200 billion to build out rural internet.
And how did that work?
It never happened.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if they want to do it again, I'm fine. But there has to be stronger language that says, you only get the money if you actually do it.
Well, no, he wants to set aside 10% of the money from spectrum auctions to deploy mobile broadband. And
you see, I'm all for incentives, but incentives have to be backed up by penalties. Right. So if you take the money and you don't perform, you give it back.
Well, otherwise, it's just a gift. It's here's a couple hundred billion. Have
the
fun.
Good news is SpaceX, with their 4,000 satellites going up in low Earth orbit, is going to have a system that's going to be a gigabit. And it's going to be cheap. You're going to have and there's one web. I think it's the other one that's doing it or trying to do it. Essentially, it's like a pizza box sized dish you put anywhere.
Right.
And then, boom, you're all set up. And that's going to be, you know, here in 2 or 3 years, I think. And when that happens, you know, I think we're going to see.
We definitely need some disruption.
It's going to be very disruptive because all this, the whole concept of like, you know, upstate New York or some rural place, Montana, it's going to have gigabit over satellite. So there's going to be multiple providers doing this. Iridium just put up a bunch of satellites in the last SpaceX launch. So you're going to have multiple people putting up arrays of internet from this, you know.
That this plan is a bad idea. The idea is get government out of the way, give some incentive to private industry to do this. What you would expect from a Republican administration as opposed to a government funding.
A form of Verizon alert.
And a former Verizon one.
Let's not demonize him yet. Because remember, when Wheeler came in, we thought, he is the towel boy for the cable industry. Right. Yeah. And it turned completely
These are not
opposite.
Unreasonable. If, as you say, the companies take this money and actually do this, take these incentives, the tax credits. He has things like government officials, I think this is great, should adopt a dig once policy so that whenever you do a highway or road construction project, you'll lay conduit for broadband. That makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of this makes sense. Maybe it's time to try another approach.
Well, possibly. I mean, what worries me more about this guy is that he is perfectly willing for telcos to mega merge, and that just reduces competition. Well,
and that's funny because Trump said during the campaign that
Trump
he was
a lot
against
during the campaign.
Time Warner merger with AT&T. It was AT&T, right? He said we're going to stop that, but this guy. Clearly, this is his position. Would be no.
His position is he's never met a merger that he didn't like. Yeah. So you know, I mean, Trump did say that. Trump said a lot of things in the campaign. Now we've got to see whether he matches up to it. If he does, great.
Yeah,
you know, he'll get my full support. But I've got my doubts. Put it that way.
Somebody in the chat room was asking about the latency issue with the satellites. The new satellites are low Earth orbit, so they are closer to the Earth, which means they can cover a smaller amount of area.
They're LEOs, which I happen to like.
So 25 to 35 milliseconds is what I've read, as opposed to 600 milliseconds. So that whole idea of you load a web page, you wait, and then boom, it comes in. That kind of goes away. It's just like wired, supposedly. We'll see.
I'm thrilled that...
You need many more satellites.
Elon
is
a really good example of how the private sector can really innovate, do some amazing things, think outside the box. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't trust Comcast, Verizon, or AT&T to do this.
No.
But if there's competition, if they try and Elon tries, I would trust the free market to generate a solution that works for
the free market generates great solutions so long as you've got a free market. And one of the really astounding things about moving to this country, because America is billed as the home of competition and the free market, the cut and thrust of free market capitalism, you've got one of the most monopolized, duopolized markets in the world for things like telecommunications, for healthcare, for the rest. It's not even close to being a free market, and that's why you need to have someone in there as an arbiter of things saying, right, if we're going to have a proper free market, you can't manipulate markets in this way.
There's actually a policy that the FCC can deal with that is more important than net neutrality if we really do want that competition, and that is to protect and expand the act that they passed the week after net neutrality that got so little play, and that opened up the polls. It made it much easier for a non-incumbent to come in and deploy broadband.
Right.
If they expand that, because it's been challenged by AT&T and by Verizon, very heavily challenged. If they uphold that and they allow a Sonic.net to come in and use less than $5,000 per house, because that's the number that the CEO of Sonic quoted. He said, whether or not we're running to a house, it costs us $5,000 per house in San Francisco to run.
Mm.
If they can reduce that significantly to even, you know, $500 a house, then suddenly you do have competition.
Well, yeah. Let's go a step further. Let's open up the cable company's physical plants to competition. Yeah. So it's not just the cable company that can use the copper, but just as it works on phone companies right now, where you could have multiple DSL providers running on those lines.
You could do what other countries like South Korea have done, is actually have the government build out a massive fiber network and open it up and say, go play. Let's see what competition brings.
That's, frankly, the solution I'd like to see. That's completely a non-starter under this administration.
So. No, never going to happen.
Well, I mean, he's talking about a $2 billion infrastructure bill. You know, if you're going to be spending that kind of much, the money, then some fiber could be nice.
At least the infrastructure plan I read, that $2 billion is almost all private industry, which then gets to monetize by charging a toll. It's kind of, at least for broadband, it would be a duplicate of what we already have.
Yeah.
We'll see. Interesting.
One of the interesting things I've seen, I've gotten this proposal a bunch of times as an angel investor, is people doing crowdfunding for fiber. So you have a provider who says, hey, I want to put this in a building. And they say, yeah, just get us 15 people in your building to say, yes, we'll run the fiber.
Right.
And then people at some buildings now are putting their own internet into the building as a way to draw people to the building. So
right.
If you want to sell in a luxury building now to millennials, you just basically get a huge fiber connection. You say, we give Wi-Fi up to this amount for $10 a month or included. And then you can actually get fiber, you know, drops
into
your building.
In Germany, it's a major factor in house prices at the moment. They reckon if you get a fast fiber internet connection into a house, you can raise the value of that house by 3 or 4%.
Makes sense. I wouldn't buy a house without high-speed internet.
Yeah.
All right, Apple. Let's take a break, then we'll do Apple.
For sure.
We still want snacks. Mm. Do we look? You know what? I think
they ate them all.
I think they
literally
ate them all. They're gone.
We were here late on Friday, and we kind of went through the snack box.
Oh, I oughta. Father Robert Ballas there. He ate all the snacks. He's also the digital Jesuit. You'll see him on Know How and This Week in Enterprise Tech. Jason Calacanis from Inside.com. And what was it? Calacanis text?
Jason's text list. I'll give one plug.
You don't want to plug it,
Inside.com/Trump.
You got a Trump newsletter.
Well, what we did is an experiment. We're basically looking at everything he promised before the election, and then we're going to just track what he promised and then what he actually does. And so it's not partisan. It's just he promised X, or he promised X, Y, and Z, and here's how he's tracking against that promise.
This is your model for Inside now. It's a lot of verticals, right?
We're going to do 50 new verticals this year. We have 14 right now. So every topic...
Ooh. I want to join Technically Sentient.
Technically Sentient is really great. That's one of our fastest growing. It's got 12,000 emails on it. Yeah. It's just about AI and machine learning twice a week. A friend of mine.
So do you just hire one person for each newsletter to do it?
Yeah, a full-time person can do 2 to 3 newsletters if they're 2 to 3. It basically takes 5, 6, 7 hours to
do
a
weekly?
Great newsletter. Most are twice a week, sometimes three. And then some we're doing twice a day. So the idea is just to make you smarter.
Ooh, read this thing.
You read this thing we bought.
I like that.
We bought that. It was a 15,000 person email newsletter where it's one story a day. Oh. One great story a day. Sort of like long reads or something.
Yeah.
Here's a high quality one. And so we just did Inside Facebook this week. So just
nice.
You know, everybody just reporting on and recapping what happened at Facebook.
I am overwhelmed by the amount of great content that's out there. We have no lack of great
And that's what we're trying to do here is like basically curate that and say here's the top 10 stories about Facebook in the last 4 days. If you were involved in Facebook in some way as a stakeholder, read it. But we'll only need you to sign up for 2 or 3. You don't have to sign up for 50. Just 2.
Just pick a couple.
3.
That's all. It's free, right?
Yeah, it's free. It's going to be classified and then eventually patronage-based. We're building the CMS now, so eventually 1% of people will be able to pay or 2% will be able to pay as a thank you. Patronage is...
Are you working through Patreon, or are you actually doing it?
No, we've done some tests on Patreon. I think we're going to build our own system.
Okay.
You know, my whole playbook is to build the CMS and make a whole machine. So when you do it for one newsletter, you establish a best practice like we did for Weblogs Inc. We had a best practice for Engadget that then went over to Autoblog and Joystick. So if we establish a best practice on Inside Trump, then it goes right to the AI newsletter and the drones newsletter and everything else.
Okay.
But you have to figure it out. So it's still hard.
And finally, Ian...
Media's hard.
Thompson of the register.co.uk.
Register.
UK. It's been harder to get him up here ever since the British store closed. But
No, well, I've now buy most of my British food on Amazon, to be honest, because I can get it in bulk. So,
including that beef jerky?
Nothing like bulk bangers.
That's Australian.
No, no, it's South African. And I bought
what is British food?
Not horrible.
Decent tea that tastes like tea, not the sweeping.
A can of a yellowy, whitish substance called custard.
You ever want to put yeast on toast?
No. Isn't that Vegemite?
No, yes. Vegemite is the bastardized version of it from Australia.
Marmite,
where they put
the
caramel in it. There's one good dish, fish and chips.
There's one thing they get right, fish and chips. Everything else?
Bangers and mash, shepherd's
pie.
I will not.
No,
oh,
no.
Come on.
I think, though, the British invented apple pie with cheese on it, did they not? With sharp cheddar cheese?
No, that's an American abomination.
Yeah, I think that was Taxi Driver, Leo. I think that was Taxi Driver before he tried to assassinate the president. I ordered a slice of apple pie with American cheese on it. I thought that was a great selection. Remember
Kippers and custard.
It was really disturbing.
There's so much more to it. Think kedgeree, for example. Curried kippers.
I try not to think kedgeree whenever possible.
It's bubble and squeak.
Bubble and squeak.
Sorry, the magnificence of a full English breakfast. How can you turn that down?
Very easily.
Eggs, sausage, fried mushrooms, black pudding, maybe some liver
black,
and onions
black
on
pudding.
The side.
Wow. I'm just no. Salivating,
you know why
it's now,
black.
Thinking about
literally none of those.
Have you had it? Have you actually had black
pudding? Of course I've had it.
Fine.
Spit it right out.
Oh, good grief.
English food is terrible. Marmite. You guys.
I bow to the nation that gave us the Twinkie, for goodness sake.
Don't knock the Twinkie.
Whoa.
That's good eating. That's good. Them's good eating.
Fighting words.
Yeah, the Goo Goo Cluster. That's ours, baby. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. Keep track of your, all right, little experiment. You're a sole proprietor, a small business maybe. Can you tell me if 2016 was profitable? Are you in profit right now? Usually, you don't know that till you do your taxes. Like once a year, you go, now I know.
How did I lose money?
FreshBooks, you know all the time. Their new dashboard, this is brand new, redesigned, knows what invoices you're out, what invoices have been paid, what your expenses are, what your profit is, and you can see it at every moment. You know how you're doing without any accounting. Now, of course, they have the accounting reports. Here we come to tax time. Sales tax summary, profit and loss, all the stuff your accountant wants, they can do. But that's kind of behind the scenes. It's done automatically. And you just do what you would normally do. You invoice people. And by the way, it's a lot easier to invoice people than it used to be. I used to fire up Microsoft Word and Excel, and then I have to
figure out. The invoicing is the best piece.
Oh, well, that's how they started, right? And
yeah,
that's how I started using it.
So good.
12 years ago, I started using them.
You don't need to install software either.
It's all on the web.
It's all on the cloud.
Though you might want the app. The app will let you take pictures of receipts and import them right in there.
I'm talking about the desktop, like with the CD-ROMs or the other.
I know. Crazy.
You have to keep installing it.
Here's an interesting one. Did you know that invoicing clients online, that the kind of invoices you do at FreshBooks will get you paid an average of 11 days faster?
Of course.
That's because it's easy for the clients to pay. There's even a pay me button right on there. You can see what invoices have been sent, what viewed. Yes, viewed. You can tell if they've read the invoice. You'll know immediately. So when they try that, I didn't get your invoice. No, you can say, no, you read it. I saw it. And, of course, when you've been paid, as well as overdue and outstanding invoices, it's easy to brand the invoices, set recurring invoices, set auto payment reminders, even automatic late fees. It's just the easiest way to keep track of your business.
Time tracking, too.
Yeah.
If you have one of those businesses where, like, an attorney is charging by the hour or a designer or a writer, it's very cool. You can, like, pause and hit play.
You can assign it. You could track it by vendor, by category, by project. Yeah. Same thing with expenses.
Yeah.
I can go on and on, but look, we got a 30-day unrestricted free trial for you at freshbooks.com/twit. Freshbooks.com/twit. Use the, when it says, how did you hear about us, just use This Week in Tech. And that way they'll know you saw it.
Yeah, Uncle Leo.
Support the show. What?
Uncle Leo.
Tell him Uncle Leo sent you.
Tell him Uncle Leo sent you.
They used to do, remember those? That was fun, the old days.
Yeah. Tell him your Uncle Leo sent you.
You know, I never did that, though. I would do radio ads and stuff and say, tell him Leo sent you. And then I remember, like, I'd go to the mattress place. I'd never say, who's going to say, hey, oh, by the way, before you write up that bill, Uncle Leo sent me. Who's going to say that? No one's going to say that.
It's creepy.
You're going to say, I heard it on the radio or something. You're not going to say Uncle Leo saying it.
It would be more like, Uncle Leo sent me?
Sent me? Is that? Does that mean, do I get anything for
I'm
that?
I'm a friend of Leo's.
Leo? Does the name Leo ring a bell?
That sounds like another one of those anonymous
agencies. Do you
agencies.
Know? It's like when you go to the club and you go to the bouncer. You know what I'm saying, Padre? When you go to the club and the bouncer and you're like, I know Steve. And they're like, you know Big Steve?
Big Steve. Like,
yeah,
I know Big Steve.
Of course I know Big Steve.
Always say I know Big Steve. That's a good one. You can't lose.
Big Steve.
Actually, related to Big Steve, Apple engineer says Tim Cook is more rigid, less competitive than Steve Jobs was. I don't know. Can you trust these former Apple engineer? Bob, at least he's doing it by name on CNBC. Bob Burrow, he said in 2007, 4 years before Steve's death, Apple was organizationally the Wild West. But this is in response. This is, you know, kind of a follow-up to his tweet saying the Jobs-era company was thin, competitive, and dynamic. He says under Tim Cook, rigid, not competitive. Tony Fadell denied it. He said, wrong! Wrong!
There was never... a new MacBook Pro. Isn't
wrong!
It marvelous? Actually, let's pick something else to look at.
I have to say, there's only one product Apple's come out with in the last year that I think is worth talking about. Maybe the iPhone 7, but the AirPods are probably the only thing that is really a classic Apple product, where it's kind of a beautiful design, highly functional.
Overpriced.
Easy to lose.
Yeah.
But I think it is design-wise very impressive. iPhone 7 is pretty good.
They look great, but it's the implementation of it. You know, I mean, it's like Apple has always built good-looking products with very few exceptions. But at the moment, they're just treading water, and they seem to have been for the last couple of years. And I don't get why they've stalled quite as bad
it's
as
hard.
They have.
It's hard. What, isn't it when you have a product like the iPhone that's so
losing
iconic,
Steve Jobs,
so successful?
Yeah. Losing Steve Jobs, somebody who just drives people and inspires people. You know, it's a real loss. I mean,
Tim is a wonderful guy, but do you think he inspires?
No.
People to do their best
no,
work.
I obviously he does. He would admit that he does not inspire people to the way Steve Jobs does.
Right.
So they're just going through this dark era, and at some point, you know, Tim's going to have to find somebody who can then come out with this next level of products that is inspiring. They're not inspiring people, and in fact, they're frustrating people. So
I just take issue with someone saying that, oh, it was the Wild West, and it was so much better back then.
Because that's nostalgia.
One of the things, actually, I'd say this is even more important than the design cues, because there was a lot of companies out there making beautiful stuff, but Apple built this juggernaut, this behind-the-scenes juggernaut of a supply chain.
Sure.
And it
under Tim
destroyed
Cook.
Everybody.
Mm. Yeah.
Because
it was the combination.
It.
No. You had to have a product to sell. So if Tim Cook was given, you know, a bunch of Nokia phones or Zunes, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to help. So, you know, what Tim's done well and he deserves credit for is he has massively rang the cash register.
Yes.
The level of efficiency, the amount of cash they have, it's all flawless, and which you would expect. But at some point, they're going to need somebody in there who can actually be the arbiter of beauty and design and take risk. They have no iPhone-like product in the pipeline that anybody knows about. The only possibilities is AR glasses, but you know the MacBook is a disaster. The watch is a disaster. I mean, that's got to be the next attempt is the AR glasses. Ooh. The other possibility is with Johnny Ive there. I'm sorry.
Is
Jimmy
Johnny there?
Jimmy Iovine, I think, is got this possibility of creating a Netflix-like service. And what I've been pushing them to do is to create their own version of Prime, which is put iCloud with music, with some sort of video rental, and with AppleCare.
Although I have to say, would you have said the same thing before Bezos was so successful with Prime? Because on the surface, Prime looks like this hodgepodge of unrelated services.
Here's the thing.
Like, here's my basket of crap.
Yeah.
Give me $99. Right?
I would
it doesn't on the before it happened,
that's
I would have said,
that's
not
free,
a bad
name. 2-day delivery was compelling for a large number of people.
2-day was all it took.
Video becomes icing. Music becomes icing.
It's all icing. There's
you have
this
to realize,
much cake.
Apple has iCloud. They figured it out. And they launched music.
Right.
I never was an AppleCare guy, but I would, if you throw an AppleCare, maybe. But music is intriguing, but not.
Well, that's why it's interesting that these rumors about Apple becoming a Netflix competitor are all under Apple Music.
Yes.
It's not a separate, like iTunes.
Which they'll rename it something. It'll just be Apple Entertainment.
Apple Media, Apple Entertainment, exactly. Or something.
And, you know, for them to, what you have to look at is Netflix is going to spend $6 billion this year. And that's to $500 million from HBO. HBO says
who's the genius at Netflix, though, that chooses shows? Because
a lot of people.
That's the key, isn't it?
Well, if you look at House of Cards, was actually that a lot of that was data mined because they found out that people that liked Kevin Spacey also liked films done by the director of House of Cards. And they liked political dramas. So I thought, right, okay, well, we'll do a political drama with Kevin Spacey and directed by this guy.
It didn't work that way, though, because what happened was Dana Brunetti and Kevin Spacey, Trigger Street, put together House of Cards, shopped it, and I think it was had a good offer from a cable network, probably HBO.
Okay.
And Brunetti told me this on the night before they made the deal with HBO, or whoever. He never did tell me who the cable company was, but I have to presume. He got a call from Netflix who said, hold on. We'd like to offer you $100 million. And they said a few things that Brunetti liked and Spacey liked, one of which is you can launch the whole season at once.
Yes.
Right.
And for that's some reason, they really liked that. They loved that binge thing.
It's the game changer.
I don't understand because it seems to me that's a negative because look at the shows that come out once a week like Game of Thrones, which is coming back in 3 months. You get this whole week of blog posts and newspaper articles
consumers,
and magazine articles.
HBO is going to blink.
And buzz.
HBO is going to blink.
Because consumers like, I know, consumers like binge watching.
Yeah,
under a million subs to HBO Go. I mean, I know people subscribe other ways, but how is HBO fallen behind Netflix in terms of total subs? That's crazy. It's because of this exact issue. HBO is going to blink.
Well, Brunetti apparently knew that because he said that was the thing. Yeah, and he called Kevin and said, Kevin, I know we got a deal here, but wait a minute, would you consider Netflix?
Yeah.
And they made the deal, and they're obviously very happy. Season 4 or 5, I think it's coming, 5. Mm. And that was a template that then Netflix used to create Stranger Things and all. I mean, so many great. Orange is the New.
But we were talking earlier about things that the younger generation will not understand. And I think in 10 years' time, if you try and explain to a 10-year-old that back in the day we had to wait for a week to find out what was going to happen on our favorite TV shows, they'll look at you like you're mad. You know, I mean, it's just binge watching is where it's going, you know.
And I think the creators like it better because the story is more intact, right? Mm. You don't have to do a whole lot of exposition saying, now you may remember last week all of this happened. It's a little easier as a storyteller to think of it as a 6-hour movie or a 10-hour or 13-hour movie than as a weekly one after the other.
The fun thing about that is that kind of content leads us more to a content style that we have down south with novellas. It's the whole idea of an encapsulated story. It's I have a story to tell.
When you mean say down south, you mean the Philippines?
Well, no, yes, the Philippines too, but more Mexico, South and Central America.
Oh yeah, the telenovela.
Telenovelas. I've got a story. It will take 3 seasons,
right?
And then it will be done, and it's a package, and it's ready to
creators
sell.
Also love here's the idea. They're not tied to a TV series for an indeterminate amount of time.
Yeah. Here's the main problem: when you're NBC. And CBS and ABC, and I've had to deal with this of late, you have to wait for a show to come off air for your show to get slotted in.
Right.
You're in a holding pattern.
Right.
Like, if Netflix wants to put out 5 Game of Thrones or 2 more, whatever, House of Cards, they don't have to wait for anybody. They just put it out.
Put it out.
And they don't have to appease the lowest common denominator. They can put out a show they know appeals to women, to men.
They don't need to get 100 million viewers.
They can make this work, which means the artists are happier.
Yeah.
Right.
And you also don't get filler episodes because it's not, we've got 4 seasons that we're contractually obligated for.
Yeah.
We have to fill this time. It's like, no, tell your story, move on.
There is a potential negative to that, which is content overload. And both Amazon and Netflix are getting to the point where the originals, there's so many, I don't even know what to watch. Right.
Well, here's the thing. You have Netflix is making over $2 billion a quarter. They're spending $6 billion on content this year. It doesn't take a genius to say that 70% of their money is going to content.
Wow.
Which is extraordinary. But then you have to think about the fact that they're going to own that content forever.
Like. Yeah.
Well, not always.
Not
always. House of Cards is first run only, and then it goes back to the Trigger Street folks.
Right, but Stranger
Not
things.
Always the case.
Yeah, they're going to own most of the stuff they're going to own. There's very few cases where they're going to have this kind of relationship. They'll own it for
I get the feeling it's House of change. Cards got a special deal because it was one of the first. Yeah.
So it's also something that was making a virtue out of necessity because Netflix was having trouble, just as Apple is making deals with Hollywood to get these shows on streaming. Hollywood said, you ain't have the DVD, but you're not putting our first run movie on streaming. And they were getting more and more crap. Now nobody cares what's on Netflix. It's a bonus.
Right. And they're getting so aggressive. I don't know if you saw this story, but Amazon offered all films at Sundance. any if you got accepted to Sundance, they gave you a $100,000 offer for the streaming rights.
Chicken feed.
Exclusive for you. Well, here's the thing.
Chicken feed.
It is chicken feed for the top third of movies at Sundance. The bottom half of movies at Sundance don't
That's
get
their budget.
Paid. They literally do not get sold, or they get sold for $25K.
Yeah.
So it's a massive payday. So this is just like coming in and being like, you know what? We'll take everything, and showing a massive amount of support for new directors. And they'll pick up, I think, a dozen or two dozen films this way.
And they acquired a film at Sundance yesterday.
We have
Manchester by the Sea was a Sundance.
We have a model for that.
Right.
By Amazon.
That's right.
The Blumhouse films. So he broke Hollywood. He's the guy who said, look, I'm not spending $100 million on a film. I'm going to spend $1 million on 100 films.
Yeah.
99 of them are going to crap out. One of them is going to be the next Paranormal Activity.
Right.
Right.
And that's the model. It's do that. Just get your net out. And you're going to own a lot of really bad content. But that one series that takes off, it's going to be a cash cow for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of insiders who are saying this is not the way to make content. But, I mean, it's what we want. We want to be able to choose what we want to watch.
So back to Apple. You think that this model works for a company like Apple?
I think Apple could put an Amazon Prime-like package together that they lost money on because they make such a high margin on
services.
So if you buy an iPhone or an iPad, it could come with the first year of Apple Music or Apple Entertainment, let's call it. Or Apple Now, whatever we're going to call it, Apple Entertainment. If Apple Entertainment came for a year with any device, I mean, what an amazing offering that would be if they wound up hitting their own Game of Thrones or their own House of Cards. You'd be like, oh, when I get the device, I can watch these TV shows. This is rad. So just
The NFL's done this with Verizon for a while, exclusive streaming of NFL games.
It's a no-brainer.
That popular with I don't know. I'm not sure. I think it's out of Apple's traditional skill set when they never usually do well in that.
Yeah, but
that's why I was asking, who is the brain at Netflix who pick? Because Netflix picks content well. Amazon does it a little differently. They have kind of a
Jeremy?
No, I said they're all. he said differently. But they're all hiring up all the executives from HBO and everything else.
Okay, that's what you do. These people know how to make content. They all have
massive footprints.
Amazon does it with data, right? Because they just have pilot week and they show.
Apple has a problem though. They have a problem in that they are much like Microsoft of the early 2000s. They've got the golden calf right now.
Yeah.
iPhone, it's the gift that keeps on giving. It's the only division that's really
making
a lot
shrinking.
Of money.
It is not going to continue to give.
But it's still making a lot of money. And so how do you convince the people at the company and your investors that we need to kill that because this market is growing?
Oh, they're not going to kill it. They're just – think about this. They, this is a company making $200 billion a year. They can just – fund this out of funny money. They're making $25 billion right now on services.
Right.
So if they're making $25 billion on services, they can F around and put $5 billion towards this and be spending just as much as Netflix and then just add it to the service package. They don't need to make money. If they make back half their money, they'd be happy.
When do we get a scarcity of good stuff, though? When does it happen that there's so many people bidding in this market?
It's already starting to happen that many cities where – I have some friends in the TV and film business – many of the cities where people actually film, like Toronto and Vancouver and all those places, they're just getting maxed out. So that's one problem. The other problem
there's also a limited number of great writers and showrunners.
That's what's happening is the writers, you nailed it. They're running out of great writers.
Yeah.
So the writers are just like cashing in now, like, what can I write? What can I write?
You know? Yeah.
Be a good job. I should practice.
I have a Jesuit brother in Los Angeles who is currently on spec for 5 different scripts. And he didn't need to give them a detailed treatment. They said, we like your stuff. We're going to give you an advance, and we need you to write this. We need it done in 6
Interesting.
Months. It's never happened before.
Apple suing Qualcomm for $1 billion. They say Qualcomm has been charging royalties for technologies they have nothing to do with.
Oops.
Ooh,
royalties.
Oh, Apple Black,
Apple's paying those royalties. And I think the real reason they're a little pissed off that Qualcomm supported Samsung in its lawsuit against Apple, and it's time for payback.
Well, Qualcomm are also an easy target, what with the Korean investigation and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Apple says for many years, Qualcomm has unfairly insisted on charging royalties for technologies they have nothing to do with. The more Apple innovates with unique features like Touch ID, advanced
rounded
displays,
corners,
cameras, just to name a few, the more money Qualcomm collects for no reasons. Well, that's how royalties work. And the more expensive it becomes for Apple to fund these innovations, Qualcomm builds its business on older legacy standards, but reinforces its dominance through exclusionary tactics and excessive royalties.
Isn't this just tempting karma, punching karma in the face?
It's, you know, it's this year. You know,
it's surprising because
what tech companies do now. Yeah. And
I thought Steve Jobs was the guy who, you know, did this kind of thing. And that Tim was a little bit above the fray.
Come on, lawyers need Porsches too, you know? I mean, it's just...
No, they need Teslas.
Well, yes, true. But, I mean, it just... It's deeply disturbing, but tech firms now spend too much time litigating this kind of rubbish when they should be concentrating on innovating.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could make the same charges against pretty much any tech company if you dug deep enough.
It seems to me another kind of nail in Apple's coffin that... When a company's struggling, what do? Well, they start suing other companies for $1 billion.
I'd like to see Samsung actually take the text from Apple's complaint and use it against Apple.
Just cut and paste.
Speaking of Samsung, tomorrow we will know what happened to the Note 7. The result of Samsung's investigation will be revealed. Wall Street Journal says it knows already.
Yeah, the rumor is that Wall Street Journal basically got the exclusive, so they'll play nice with Samsung next time round.
Because right now they play nice with Apple mostly.
Yeah.
Right? That's not nice. Don't do that. Anyway, the story, maybe they did have a leak, is that the batteries in the iPhone, I'm sorry, the Note 7 were irregularly sized. And so some of the Note, this is why not all, but some of the Note 7s became explosive because the batteries were, I guess, too big.
And getting compacted down, and that was causing breakage. I don't know. I mean...
Were those the battery packs that were made in the United States? Is that going to be the...
That could be very interesting, if so.
That will be just not great.
Yeah. I mean, it's... But, I mean, we've heard so many different explanations. You know, they're trying to pack too much technology in there. They did it too narrow. That it was the software problem. It's just... This is what they're going to tell us the problem was. The big thing is, can they actually make it right next time round?
They have to. They've got the S8
They'll
coming.
Get it right. And just like the antenna gate with iPhone 4. Was it iPhone 4 had the antenna gate? It's like... These things pass, you know, nobody got killed and
cost the company $5 billion.
Which is nothing for a company that makes $300 million. Well, so they'll easily get through it. Some people might get it fired, but I think there's no way that they'll have this problem occur in the 8. So
no, I don't think you can afford to, but it was really unfortunate for Samsung that at a time when they could have just nailed iPhone,
it was considered
Apple.
It was the first time it was considered universally a better phone than the iPhone 7, correct?
And they had a chance to absolutely pummel Apple, and they just screwed the pooch.
Yeah, that's a gift to Apple. I mean, actually, when you think about it, let's say they had nailed that and they didn't have the problem. What would that have done to Apple? Right? Would Apple have lost?
I mean, it is a phenomenal product. When I got my hands on it at IFA, it was amazing. It's like, okay, this is the Jesus phone, quote unquote. Jesus
would it have been good enough to dethrone Apple?
Better battery life, better screen, faster processors, more flexible.
And we just you get those like swing voters, like we saw in the election. Like, who are these 5% of people who can't decide between Hillary and Trump? It's like, you really can't decide between Android and iOS.
I mean, thing keeping iPhone users, once you bought into the Apple ecosystem, that does have a certain sort of drag effect on changing around.
iCloud.
But and actually trying to transfer that across to an Android phone.
iMessage
is
the stickiest right now because, you know, when you're not an iMessage user, like we have an iMessage group for a group of us who were, you know, playing cards together, whatever. And then one of them decided they were going to try the Android Pixel, whatever the group, whatever the
Love
nice
the
one.
Pixel,
And all of a sudden they're in blue and they can't see any of the.
No, they're left out. They're blue bubbles.
And we're like, oh, well, and he literally changed his phone back because of iMessage. So iMessage is very, very sticky.
That's happened to Megan Maroney over here. Same thing. iMessage has been the most anxiety-inducing change when she switched with Jason Howell.
I have the same thing with my wife. I introduced her to some Android phones because she uses an iPhone. She's like, well, I mean, I like it, but then when I looked at what's needed to actually get all my stuff over there,
this is another thing. If you look at Microsoft, they were so bold on the Satya Nadella to make Outlook and all the apps available on all platforms, and then they just took over the charts in iOS. Why doesn't Apple do this with iMessage and just put it on every platform?
It's because of that stickiness.
For that reason,
you just described the stickiness.
For that reason, it sells iPhones.
But just think about how they might
be people in the fold.
But it would be a bold move to try to pull people back.
And see, that's
then pull people over.
Then you'd use the Pixel.
Going back to the previous story, that's the reason why they're not going to kill that. Yeah. That is the golden cow. The fact that you want to stay inside that ecosystem. Yeah. They can't release something that will be like a massive content blockbuster.
But what we've seen in the tech industry is that approach doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, sooner or later, somebody finds a way
to find a way around it, and it is wonderfully profitable.
You know what
Very short term, but this is the problem with Apple. They are thinking far too short term at the moment.
I never got a confirmation on this, but did anybody ever put the the Galaxy 7 in a... Because the Galaxy 7 did have a VR headset, or no? Did they never?
Yeah, it's got the Gear VR.
Did anybody put the Gear VR on their face and then have it go on fire?
No.
I hope not.
This never came up as a discussion topic. And people are like, oh, it can go on fire. Maybe
the reason
it
gets on
down.
Fire is because you don't notice that it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. Yeah. If it were on your face, you'd probably know.
Take it off. So that's a feature then.
And remember, it is waterproof, so you could have just left it underwater.
I tell you something. I thought that the iPhone 7 was the portrait mode photo is okay. And my wife's like, oh, those are cute photos. But we went to Indian Springs in Calistoga here, where they have that great natural hot springs.
The pool is so nice.
So nice. And we're in the pool, and I'm on my phone. I was like, wait a second, this thing can take underwater photos. I started taking underwater photos.
Isn't that
of my
fun?
Daughter swimming.
Yeah.
The greatest. I was like, now I can recommend iPhone 7.
Yep.
Underwater, I thought it was to protect you from your phone dropping in the toilet. It turns out that's not what it's for.
It's an underwater camera.
Underwater videos of your kids. They're amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So worth upgrading for just that if you go in the water.
Except the three pools that are near me in San Francisco all have signs saying no iPhones in the pool.
Really?
Well,
Underwater. Oh, I can take photos of people. Yeah. This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Jerks, knock it off.
What is wrong with you people?
A good friend of the network has a new job. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, we had a fun week. If you didn't watch every single show, and I don't blame you if you didn't.
Teaser.
We're going to have a little, we have a little cut down. It's a package showing you what you might have missed.
Show us
previously on Twit.
May 2 is exploding right now. It allows you to take a selfie and then magically transform yourself into a fanciful anime-style character.
I don't care if we're being tracked by people in China or Russia or anywhere. It's totally worth this photo. It was worth it.
Triangulation.
I'm really thrilled to bring in a man whose work you absolutely do know. Jordan Ritter is here.
The way we think of rocket ship startups today, I think Napster was the first.
And Hacker Rock.
This Week in Computer Hardware.
The story that really grabbed me, it made me think, goodness, we are finally making progress in an important area. A Japanese toilet industry agrees to standardize complex bidet controls. There's icons that are used on toilets, and they are pretty much different from every manufacturer. They're trying to be more tourist-friendly going into the Olympics in 2020.
I can appreciate that.
Twit, making the world safe for technology.
What a thing Napster was. I still probably have, 30 or 40 gigabytes of music that I downloaded from Napster at the time.
I never downloaded anything anything illegal.
Never did anything illegal. Of course not.
It was an amazing week here at Twit, but we've got Jason Howell with a look at the week ahead.
Thanks, Leo. Here is a look at just a few things that we're going to be following in the coming week. Later on tonight, actually, don't have to wait very long for this, Samsung is going to reveal its findings as to why the Note 7's batteries were so explosive. Samsung reportedly enlisted the help of three independent agencies to examine the cause, which led the company to recall millions of units late last year, and we're going to find out what that reason is. On Tuesday, January 24th, Samsung, again, is expected to have some good news during its earnings report, despite its ongoing Note 7 issues, with record profits for Q4, thanks to its chip business that is reportedly offsetting its losses in the mobile division. On Thursday, January 26th, Microsoft and Alphabet are just a few who are set to release their earnings report numbers. Alphabet beat expectations for Q3, which puts pressure on the company to continue that progress, especially in light of its new crop of hardware offerings, the Pixel device and all of its other stuff that hit the market in October. Megan Maroney and I will cover all of this and a whole lot more as it pops up on Tech News Today each and every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific. That is a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Actually, really back to Robert this time.
I am Leo. It's like I am Groot.
I am Groot. Thank you, Jason Howell. And, of course, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. You got to tune in for Tech News Today. And, of course, that's the two folks who swapped iPhones and Android phones. Jason's the host of All About Android. Megan's the host of iOS Today.
Jason has been very honest about the things he likes about iPhone.
Is he liking it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, Megan has had trouble.
She is not liking it.
She misses her iWatch.
Yeah.
Her iWatch. She really
Apple
does.
Watch, yeah. She, poor girl.
She's the only person.
She has a Moto 360. That's the
problem. I bought that piece of garbage. I wore it twice. I was like, this thing is terrible. I threw it back in the drawer.
You're wearing a Fitbit
I love the Fitbit. It's great for sleep. It's the battery doesn't drain out in 8 hours.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And it has GPS in it. I have the Surge one. So when I go for a walk, I don't have to use my phone for GPS. I go on a nice hike with my daughter. I did 11.5 miles yesterday. Bang, I hit the GPS. I have the whole map of my route, which I'll never look at or use, but it makes me feel good.
I used to have Leo's old Moto 360 until it broke.
It broke?
I guess it's not as waterproof as they thought it was.
The watch is DOA.
You know, you're not allowed to take that in the pool.
It didn't go in the pool. It got, you know, in the rain.
Were you taking pictures in the pool, Padre, with your watch? Padre, no.
I still wear, you know, it's funny because I have an Apple Watch and a Moto 360. And I really like the round.
What
Apple Watch
is
like
for, a lot. What do you use it for aside from telling time?
Yes.
Not much. Notifications?
When the phone rings, I know who's calling.
Oh, that's nice.
I do get notifications. Calendar notifications are actually pretty useful. And the Apple Watch is better at that because it has that taptic engine.
When this gets to a 4G or an LTE connection and you can take it with you without your smartphone.
That's
going
to be the killer.
The
and the battery that lasts longer than a day.
You just described the Gear S3. That's a Samsung Gear S3.
Yeah.
How many hours?
No, you don't. It's standalone.
No, it's standalone.
Oh, okay.
It has LTE. So that's the problem. It has a SIM card.
How long does it take? How long does it last?
5 days.
No.
Yeah. No. Seriously. It's when it starts getting down to 15%, it goes into low power mode. So you still get the vital information.
It doesn't work with an iPhone though. Yeah.
It's standalone. It'll do GPS without a phone. It will do directions without
a phone.
I like
the Frontier Edition.
Huh.
But don't you find these things make you? One of the things I found, because I've tested out a lot of smartwatches and I've never yet found one that I would actually spend my own money for, because they make you incredibly rude. Every time your wrist vibrates. Instinctively,
Say you're less rude because you're not looking at your phone as much.
If you're in a conversation with somebody and you're looking at your watch, you're basically saying, I'm bored with you. I've got other things to do. Why are you still here? And it just makes you automatically
You know what? It's very interesting you bring this up because I am writing a series of protocols for meetings because people don't know how to take meetings anymore, especially millennials, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now, I set my clock. I say, I have 25 minutes. I'm going to set a 25-minute timer. It'll go off. We can wrap up. I'm just going to put my phone down, and then I take out my pen and paper. And then I have some knucklehead millennial come in. They open their laptop up. They got 8 windows open, and they're in the meeting typing. And I said, whoa, timeout.
Yeah.
Especially if they work for me. I said, do not show up for a meeting unless I explicitly tell you to have your laptop. Do not show up with a laptop. Pen and paper. Pay attention. Yeah. Keep it short. We're not here to do group email. That's like this. I was about to say something.
Most useful meeting strategy I found. Everybody stands up.
Perfect.
Do the
stand up.
Stand up.
Yes. Yeah. In and out.
Really
nobody gets
focuses
hurt.
Focuses the mind.
For sure.
Jeff Bezos has a fairly elaborate meeting protocol, right?
Yeah.
Let me just see.
Do you have to walk in and go, oh, hell, the Amazon
No,
the
there's
King.
Some kind you of have agenda, to have one... and your PowerPoint better be good, because he has a very specific way that he wants these PowerPoints, where you have to answer the most important questions first, and if you don't, he just rips you. Like, if there's stuff in there that's like filler, he's like, what the... You know, that's supposed to be what I heard. No filler.
I think you're supposed to, if you're going to tell him, if you're going to pitch a new idea, new product idea, you write the... result, you know, like the press release first. That's the first thing you do.
Yeah, okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
That saves a lot of time.
You gotta have a good elevator pitch. And the pizza rule. You should never have a meeting that's bigger than two pizzas would feed.
Yeah. That's
so
a
that's
good one.
Two people.
But he never has pizza at these meetings.
It depends.
Which is
if
very
Leo and I are coming, it's a four pizza rule.
In the Joseph's, whenever we have a meeting, we have
we put two
drink,
slices
of pizza of water right before. So, you know, the meeting's going to end.
Oh, and then you play bladder roulette. Yeah.
Don't, to get back to the S3, don't buy the S3 now, right? Because presumably, Mobile World Congress is 2 months away. They'll be new. I would love to see the new Note. Although, I got to say, now having used the Pixel for a while, I love the pure Android-ness.
We're so peaking out with the smartphone revolution.
We are peaking out. Yeah.
It is just
a commodity. It has officially switched.
It's like
into
what's
commodity
left. It's like they one person comes out with one feature, and the other phone 3 months later.
Yeah. It's, well, I mean, they've got to carry on. They'll do the incremental stuff. So you've got the Android VR phones coming out. Yeah. Then if Tango actually does its job, you know, it's just, yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff.
It's hard to get excited about any new feature, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, Tango's like, yeah. I really need a 3D model of this room right now.
What I do believe AR ultimately will be an important user interface. Killer.
Where Tango might actually become useful is not for the individual. If you have enough users who have Tango-enabled phones and that data is going back to Google, right. they could have a literal down-to-the-centimeter map of every street, every building in the world. I mean, that is interesting tech, but the individual doesn't reap the benefits of that until far in the future.
I was going to say, and also, it's that would be some...
like effect.
That would be some very, very heavy data loads to accept people to accept, particularly with the price of data in this country. But I mean, there are going to be incremental stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a brick, and there's not a lot you can do with that now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to light AR glasses. I've been, you know, I've done HoloLens. I've done all the other.
I want to wear those around all the time.
I like
wear them all the time.
AR contact lenses.
Bing, Jason Calacanis. It would say everything about him. Follower count.
Yeah.
I'd say, God. You're under 20.
Padre,
you're under 200,000. I can't hang with you.
I'll be with you in a minute. Padre.
Ding. Go to a party. You just have little call outs over everyone's head.
Exactly.
This is going to be great for me, man.
The problem is, again, we're in the hype cycle for AR. So we were discussing this in the pub on our traditional Friday night drink up after work.
Something you won't have to do once AR is popular.
Whether or not. Companies like Magic Leap and the new Theranos when it comes to this sort of thing, because we've seen so much hype, and we were talking earlier about Apple getting into the AR game, and Microsoft's been talking about these low-cost AR devices, which are apparently coming down the line at some point. There's going to be so much hype and so much rubbish out there. I mean, I've tried HoloLens. It's good, but it's not game-changingly good.
But you
good.
Could see it.
You could see it. I mean, version 3 of that? I mean, version 1 and 2, fascinating. Version 3 of that is going to be game-changer. The thing that's interesting about Magic Leap is, one, the company's from Florida, which I never trust a company from Florida. That's just,
how can you come up with a good idea in Florida?
No, but it's also like every company in Florida seems to be a little fugazi. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, putting that aside, they sold people on the technology by showing them like a box that was like an oversized box, and they were like, yeah, we're going to be able to get this down to glass size.
And they never have.
And they haven't to date. So you have this one group of people, like, I think Andreessen Horowitz people are like, it's the greatest thing ever. But then none of us have seen it except the people who are proponents of it are the investors. Starting to sound a little familiar.
It's interesting you say that, because I thought you would have insight and you would say this is going to be bigger than it.
I want to... This is one of the few where I literally cannot tell, because
I don't think it was malfeasance, but I think what happened is
oversold.
They thought they had a technology they could miniaturize, and it turns out that this ray tracing technology, this fiber technology, isn't easy to do, and they oversold it in the sense that they had higher hopes for what they were able to do with it.
Not quite as intentional or deranged as
that. It happens all the time, doesn't it? Yeah. In technology, you say, I can make this work, and cold fusion, and you just can't do it at mass.
But I mean, I got quite impressed. I mean, when I went to the Oculus launch, there they were saying, obviously the goal is to get this into a pair of sunglass style headgear that you can wear. But we are at least 10 years away from making that happen. And I thought that was very honest and upfront of them. But for a company to say no, we can make it happen in the next 2 years. I'm incredibly skeptical on that.
Well, and
we haven't been able to steal the designs from ZeniMax yet,
crazy.
So next year we'll have it. It'll be great. We'll talk about, actually, that Oculus Rift suit and Mark Zuckerberg wearing a suit during the testimony.
That guy's going to be wearing a lot of suits if he runs for president.
And I want to talk about your thoughts on this, because I know you have political aspirations, perhaps.
Maybe. Who knows?
Peter Thiel apparently does, and maybe even Zuck and Jeff Bezos.
Everybody's feeling... like they're qualified suddenly. I wonder why.
Well, not nearly that, but if the conflict of interest stuff isn't
don't have to release your taxes.
If it doesn't have to be.
Don't have to put things in a bond trust.
Right.
And you get to build your brand while in office. Sign me up.
Everybody in Silicon Valley
wants
to be president now.
Sounds good.
Just goes to show the American dream is true. Anyone can become president. Literally anyone can become president.
Somebody has.
Actually, not you, Ian. You can't.
You can't. Yeah.
Also, we should mention Mark's lawsuit against hundreds of people in Hawaii, which is not very presidential and maybe is an indicator.
Not a good look.
He does not want to run. We'll see.
Not a good
look.
Our
show today brought to you by my sheets. Slept on by three former U.S. presidents. Mm. Maybe even by a current U.S. president.
They're so
I don't
luxurious.
Know.
These are the greatest.
They are the best sheets, made from 100% organic cotton. And you're going to say, what's the thread count, Leo? And I'm going to tell you, I don't care. It's not about thread count. In fact, I've had terrible sheets with a very high thread count. That is kind of a red herring. What you should
bogus metric.
It's bogus. What you should check is the cotton. Is it soft? Where does it come from? Boll & Branch uses sustainable and responsibly sourced cotton. Responsibly manufactured, the softest cotton. It's incredible. It's organic, and they get softer over time. And I tell you, I've bought really nice, expensive sheets that never softened. They felt like it was like crispy the whole time.
Itchy.
Not Boll & Branch. They're nice. They donate a portion of every sale to help fight human trafficking. They really want to make a socially responsible product. Look at that box. Wait a minute. Look at that box. That's what their Boll & Branch sheets come in.
Beautiful.
I thought, this is a wedding gift? Where did this come from? No, it was my Boll & Branch. Beautiful satin ribbon. So if you have a wedding gift or you want to give a housewarming gift to somebody, Boll & Branch is a wonderful choice. 100% ultra soft, 100% organic cotton sheets. You're buying directly from the factory. So if you were buying these in stores, you'd pay like $1,000 for these, but they're only a couple of $100 because you're buying direct from the factory. No middleman.
No real estate.
No real estate either. Thousands of five-star reviews. Forbes, Fast Company, The Wall Street Journal, they're all talking about it.
People love them.
Try it risk-free for 30 nights. BollandBranch.com. It's B-O-L-L, like Cotton Bowl, like the boll weevil. BollandBranch.com. If you don't love them, you send them back for a refund. You'll never, I'm telling you, you're never going to send these back. You're gonna say, give me my Boll & Branch. BollandBranch.com. We got $50 off your first set of sheets when you say that fast.
Hey.
We got $50 off your first set of sheets when you see offer code TWIT. B-O-L-L and B-R-A-N-C-H.
BollandBranch.com.
You see offer code TWIT. Right. Zuck is highly confident that Oculus did not steal its technology from a Bethesda softworks company called ZeniMax Media.
Seems like an objective third party.
He's not going to go in there and go, well, I'm not sure, to be honest.
Yeah, parent company of Bethesda Softworks and id Software. In fact, remember that John Carmack left id and went to Oculus. He was very excited about Oculus. ZeniMax says Carmack stole trade secrets and destroyed evidence. Hmm. He took VR technology when he was an employee over to Oculus when he became the CTO in 2013. Now, remember, the Oculus Rift has been around for longer than that. So Zuckerberg testified. He wore a suit, looked very nice. He said, quote, the idea that Oculus products are based on someone else's technology is just wrong.
Well, he would say that, wouldn't he? But
he would.
You know, and if you look at the cat, I mean, this is the problem with NDAs in our industry, is that, you know, if the company that you move to is doing fairly well, then the terms of most NDAs are such that if you even breathe in another company, then you're liable to be sued. So it's an interesting case, but I they need some kind of a smoking gun. At the moment, it's all, well, he must have used a bit of it. There doesn't seem to be any proof on one way or the other.
Their smoking gun right now seems to be that text from Zuck. Essentially saying, well, how much due diligence should we do? That's not a smoking gun. That's something that might raise suspicion, but it's not saying, hey, you know what, let's just steal that tech.
Well, okay, so Amin Zufonia, no. Started so well.
And then, I mean, it's Amin.
Zufonia.
I'll just have one more drink.
Facebook's Vice President of Corporate Development texted Zuck saying, there are things Oculus told us that are simply not true. This is during the due diligence. In response, Zuck texted back, and this is in the court record.
Yeah, this is the one.
Keep pushing forward till we have something we can sign on a moment's notice, then we can figure out how long we wait for diligence. Essentially, the lawyers for ZeniMax said that there was very little due diligence. They began on Friday, signed the deal on Monday. So he's not really impugning Zuck so much as saying maybe Palmer Luckey and Oculus pulled the wool over Facebook's eyes. Facebook did want to get in on VR, and they say they were awfully anxious to do so, so they didn't ask the tough questions.
Well, also, I mean, we found out that this week that they paid $3 billion, not $2 billion for it, which is an even more staggering amount of funds when you consider it.
Chicken feet.
One bargain at twice the price.
1% of their companies.
It's still $3 billion. You know, it's a lot of money in a lot of circles.
Billions the new million.
They gave $20 billion.
More than $20 billion for WhatsApp. So, WhatsApp.
I know. I still can't get over that one.
If you think you're because if you're going to get disintermediated and Google could have bought the company and really made a run at you, it's like eliminating a threat for 8% of the company's value.
It's not so much that they wanted it; it's they wanted no one else to have it.
Had to have it. Yeah.
Speaking of WhatsApp. A number of security experts have now written a letter to The Guardian saying there is no backdoor in WhatsApp. It was irresponsible of you to publish that article.
Where did they get Guardian get this piece of information that was a backdoor?
It was a complete red herring. I mean, it wasn't untrue. Well, no, but you've got to make certain security choices in an app to deal with various different scenarios.
To use the word backdoor was wrong.
Yes, utterly.
That was sensationalist and probably to drive traffic. It isn't the problem. So here's the problem. When you use WhatsApp, and it's a problem, frankly, with a lot of encrypted messaging, WhatsApp lets you change your key. You go to a new phone, you got to change your key, right?
Sure.
And the vulnerability is that if somebody changes their phone and their key is changed, they can continue to send you messages, but messages now, and you could send them messages, which perhaps are no longer secure because maybe it wasn't them that changed their phone, but some other third party that changed the key. Mm. And WhatsApp didn't really notify you, but there is a setting in WhatsApp's settings to say, hey, when the key changes, notify me and don't just send that message automatically. So that was the loophole, is it would still message even if the key was changed.
Yeah.
Now, if you switch this switch, it's just as secure as Signal. Moxie Marlinspike, who created the Signal protocol that WhatsApp uses, and of course it's also in Signal, said it's not a backdoor, it's not a vulnerability, it's an implementation decision. It's not the way we do it in Signal, but it's legitimate, and there is a setting in WhatsApp. It really wasn't appropriate for them to say there was a vulnerability, but it wasn't inappropriate for The Guardian to write an article saying, hey, if you want security in WhatsApp, you should disable this feature.
I mean, it's that would have been a legitimate article to go, but saying there's a backdoor at a time like this,
that's
where everyone's really worried about this sort of thing. I mean, I trust Moxie far more than I would trust The Guardian for a start. But when you actually looked into the intricacies of this, technically they might have had a point. But it's one of those things where you could actually have created a serious security situation if you had control of so many other things that you own them anyway. I mean, I found the use of the term backdoor to be, quite frankly, you know, it's just scaremongering.
Well, 30 security researchers have signed an open letter saying, Guardian, you should retract that story. It isn't a backdoor. Zeynep Tufekci, who is a academic, wrote, and, you know, a friend of the show, also wrote, unfortunately, your story was the equivalent of putting vaccines kill people in a blaring headline over a poorly contextualized piece. I'm not sure I'd go that far. If you read the piece, it was pretty straightforward at what it said. However, I think since people do use WhatsApp for secure communications, it wasn't a backdoor, but it probably is appropriate to tell them you need to flip this switch just in case.
Or just dump
it's
WhatsApp.
Not a government backdoor.
Dump WhatsApp and go with Signal. Why, you know?
Well, right.
Go
until someone leaks out a rumor that Signal's also got a backdoor. I mean, the issue with all of this is, if anyone's going to use these applications, it means they're concerned about privacy. And privacy all matters on you trusting the provider.
Yeah.
And that is so easy to break, which is why the people I run with, you know, at DEF CON, Black Hat, they don't use these. They roll their own because then they can be sure that there's nothing else in there.
Well, people believe Signal is.
Signal's open source.
Yes.
That has a lot to do with people's trust of Signal. People trust Moxie Marlinspike. The researchers who wrote this letter, though, I mean, Bruce Schneier, Isis Lovecraft from the Tor Project, Catherine McKinley from Mozilla. I mean, some very good people.
They know what they're doing.
Jonathan Zdarsky. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's considered perhaps an acceptable trade-off. It's not an unreasonable way to do this. You know, anyway, there's a story. You decide for yourself.
The Signal is this open whisper system. Signal is a private company with an open source project.
Open source product.
So they or a corporation based where?
Russia. I'm not sure they're actually incorporated as a corporation. They're a bunch. They're a collective based in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to wonder. That's what I need to understand about the company.
They did. I presume license the Open Whisper technology to Facebook for WhatsApp. Maybe not. Maybe they gave it to them. I don't know.
I don't know the full details of this, but Moxie is not the kind of person to run a corporation. He has enough, you know.
No, he's basically an anarchist.
He is an anarchist, and he's open and proud about it, and he has every reason to be. But you know, it's just
anarchists need money too.
Well, sure, but you know, I mean, they don't need that much money. I mean, look at what Jeff Moss did with Black Hat and DEF CON. Right. Sold Black Hat off, made the money, and used that to fund DEF CON for the rest.
Literally, everybody I know is just getting off of every system and going into Signal.
Signal's the one everybody uses.
Everybody's telling me,
and there's a lot of trust.
Texting me, put me in Signal. Yeah. Because if you look at now,
that's Mark the problem. Andreessen's, by the way, you have to convince your correspondents to use it.
Well, I'm getting people who just say Signal.
I would love it if everybody just said, "Okay, we're all going to use Signal."
And if you look at all these legal cases now, it seems Mark and Zuck are constantly going back and forth. The sale of Oculus,
and you can read all those messages.
And when he was trying to give him the upper hand with like the governance committee on the board, which is like a massive disaster, where like Mark was on this committee to like convince the board to give super shares to Zuckerberg to have control of the company, even if he left the company for 2 years, which was like completely against all corporate governance rules, and Andreessen's coaching him on how to negotiate against him and the other comp members. Like, this isn't helping. It was like, wow.
Well, you can bet they're using secure messaging.
Oh,
now.
You bet they are now. Of course they are,
especially if he wants to run for president. You want to keep all of this stuff
private.
See, I'm not sure Zuck's going to run for president. I don't think what he actually thinks about what it's going to involve. I think he'll just like, you know what?
I'll just step down. Let's face it.
But
he wants to change the world, right? He wants to make a difference. Yeah. What better place than the bully pulpit of the presidency? I think probably these tech guys who were, in most cases, except for Peter Thiel, Clinton supporters, also feel like they need to step in and win.
Mm.
There's a sense of urgency now.
Believe me, Zuckerberg controls Facebook. He could win anytime he wants.
He could also win based upon having been in a movie, like he was in The Social Network. Everybody's used his product, so they know who he is.
Certainly, he's got name recognition.
Recognizable is a
young,
big part of this.
He's presumed. Know? I am sure presumed by the vast majority of Americans to be a very smart guy.
Of course,
I think a lot of people think poorly of his social agenda.
Mm-hmm.
There are people concerned about privacy and so forth, right?
Yeah, I think
he'd have to overcome that.
There's probably some people who would say in his younger years he was a little precocious with his privacy.
That's a polite way of putting it.
I mean, a $20 million fine, the largest one ever, 20-year audit with the FTC. I mean,
and there's this Hawaiian island thing.
Well,
might be not as bad as it seems.
But still, you do not pick a fight with Hawaiians. Hawaiians hold grudges for generations.
Yeah.
So what he has a several hundred acre estate.
Yeah. Number one, so he bought a huge estate, which Oprah did as well.
On Kauai.
Oprah bought it on Maui. The most beautiful of the islands.
When
you buy these huge estates there is definitely some resentment because people feel you should be able to traverse the land. And then this has to do with pockets of land that nobody knows who the ownership of is, which he's forcing to be auctioned and then will buy, obviously, because he doesn't want people on his property.
Well, but the thing is, you cannot own coastal land.
Right.
You can't. Mm. So even if he manages to buy all that property, people are still legally allowed to walk across the beach.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's like, this is a constant – I faced a little bit of this when I used the term mahalo for one of my search engines. I had a couple of people who were like – they were like, hey, how dare you use that word? And I was like, please explain to me what you're talking about. I'm a fan of Hawaiian culture. I didn't know I was doing anything wrong.
So – apparently, this is not unusual. This is, according to the Star Advertiser, the Honolulu Star Advertiser, legal action known as quiet title and partition is an uncommon in Hawaii, yet even with an order from a judge and financial compensation, forcing people to sell land that has been in their family for generations can be off-putting, especially when driven by the sixth richest person in the world.
But you see, he's done this before in Dolores Park when he bought his place there. He bought the four houses overlooking it.
Yeah, but he didn't force him to sell it.
That's fine.
He gave him a good offer.
It's a entirely different situation in Hawaii because you have to remember there's still it's not even a minority. There's a vocal group in Hawaii who are still very ticked off that the United States occupied it.
Right.
No, particularly in Kauai as well. Yeah, I mean, it's the northwest and northeast corners of Kauai are very...
Right. So you have a Haole coming in, and he's bought a lot of land. Okay, they can do that. But now he seems to be...
I want control.
It looks like he's trying to get rid of the Hawaiian-ness of Hawaii. Yeah. Well, that's not going to go over well.
Yeah. No.
Even if he will win this, but that's going to be held against him for generations.
Hundreds of defendants, which is not another problem, right?
Yeah.
The reason there seems to be some thought that Mark might be interested in a presidential run is his decision to make his goal this year to visit with people in all 50 states. He decided he wasn't not religious.
Yeah.
He didn't say he's religious. Huh.
That was one of the most carefully phrased statements you've seen. It's just like,
he magically went from an atheist who found religion.
Yeah. Well, he didn't say he was, but he didn't say he was religious.
We'd call it agnostic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to say that either. Maybe.
The other thing was Zuckerberg built a 6-foot wall around his property.
Yeah, they didn't like that.
And they didn't like that either because now people had the view of...
stones.
And he's like, well, okay, dude, I mean, we understand, like, especially in Kauai, which is like the most chill of all the islands, like, this is unchill behavior.
And Hawaiians can be incredibly passive aggressive. Just,
oh, yeah.
FYI.
Well, it is their island.
It is their island.
It is their island. You know, there is that.
I always feel guilty going there because the British introduced the mosquito to Hawaii. And ever since then, whenever I go...
It was you!
I'm so sorry. Look, it was 200 years ago, but we're really, really sorry.
By the way, the Star Advertiser's headline on the wall is, "Reviews of Zuckerberg's wall mixed."
Yeah, I think that the Star
mixed reviews
might be a little bit in his
pro
pocket.
Business.
Yeah, I have a feeling they're pretty stoked. But it's just like, honestly, these guys become masters of the universe, and I know a bunch of them, and like some of them remain normal, and then some of them get a little wacky. Mm. When I hang out with Mark Cuban and like we go out or we have a drink, like it's just him.
He's just a normal guy.
Out with some other people and...
Let's say Larry Ellison.
I don't know Larry, but there's other people who can't show up to a party and be normal.
Right.
You know,
something happens when you get to that level.
And there's some people who can live in a house and like talk to their neighbors, and there's other people who have to build huge fences and have eight things.
Right.
It's just like, live your life normally.
There is probably, when you're that rich, the sixth richest man in the world, a security issue. You're concerned that somebody's going to kidnap your daughter, right? Yeah. Max is
vulnerable. A six-foot fence is not going to stop.
That's not security.
That's privacy.
Yeah. So, and it's like, you know,
he's hired a photographer to follow him around and take very nice professional pictures.
But about a dozen people
he can get that for free.
His Facebook feed.
He's got a social team doing it. And then I think the real indicator is that when they rejiggered Facebook's, and you'll know more about this than I will, Jason, rejiggered their Facebook's stock situation so that they could donate so much money to Priscilla and
still control it.
Mark Zuckerberg Foundation
and still control it.
And there's a clause in there that says, and can hold public office and not give up his stock.
That was the whole debate with the governance board. Can he keep control of the company while he's not working at it?
So you thought he might run for Senate, not...
I have a feeling he's going to run for something other than president. That's my guess. But who knows? I mean,
why stop with Senate?
Because governor, he could consider governor. You know,
Senate has much lighter conflict of interest laws.
Yeah.
At this point, it's like...
No. If you're the president, there are no conflicts.
I learned this.
It's a six-year rather than a two-year election cycle in the Senate, which makes it an awful... You don't have to go and face the voters that often.
We saw something happen from Reagan to Bloomberg and... Arnold
Schwarzenegger.
All of those things sort of, and Al Franken, who actually seems to have done a really tremendous job. Like, he takes it very seriously. I don't know if you saw him.
People thought it was a joke.
He was very good this week.
No, he's very serious. The guy seems incredibly knowledgeable, and he takes the job seriously by all accounts. I think people are starting to realize, hey, you don't have to be we got kind of conned that you had to be a lifelong politician to be a politician and win. Right. And if Bloomberg had gone up against Trump, which he should have, and he was very close to doing, and there were many talks internally amongst the
lot of
circles.
He would have had to be an independent, though, right?
He could have run as Republican or independent, a Democrat or an independent, but he did not want to split the Hillary vote, and Hillary would not have given him the spot. Mm. I believe he should have run as Hillary's vice president. I think if he does that, Hillary wins. I think if he runs, he wins, but he didn't want to split the vote. But I think he would have, if he did split the vote...
You can't blame anybody for not running because it didn't. Nobody thought, even the Trump team didn't think that he had a chance. And
they thought they were going to lose.
I would say that on this very show last June, I did predict a Trump win, but in fact, you were on the same show with
me. A few people did.
It was definitely possible. I, in fact, had a bet with a friend of mine. My friend said, "I'll give you 2-1 that Trump will win." And this is when they were Trump was maybe 35%. I said, "I got to take that bet." Then my friend offered to buy me out of the bet the week before. 2 weeks before for 80 cents on the dollar. So I was like, all right, I'll save 20 cents on the dollar. I took the buyout. Because I was feeling guilty about when all this stuff came out about him. Yeah, I was like, I kind of feel bad about this bet. I mean, I like to gamble, but I just don't want to win this money.
I know. I won a bottle of Talisker on the election result, and it was the bitterest drink that you've ever gone through. It's just like, I love the whiskey.
The other thing, of course, is that Zuck hired David Plouffe, the Obama's campaign manager, as what is like some sort of social media expert.
He would have to step down from Facebook.
No, he wouldn't.
Well, no, but
he's stay on the board.
No, he's watching with interest to see what happens with Donald Trump.
I'm thinking about this from a PR perspective because when you look, when Facebook has already done unauthorized research as to how to change people's moods by varying what they see on their news feed. I don't think people would trust him in a political role if he was still in a position of responsibility.
It doesn't matter if they trust him. He just makes sure that they trust him. He can change their minds.
He can change their minds by manipulating the feed.
By the end of it, he'll be the most beloved character in American history, I think.
Huge beloved character.
Huge beloved. One of our friends, Matt Cutts, now has a job with the government. Matt, I feel bad that we have not talked more about the U.S. Digital Services. This was the SWAT team that was brought in from Silicon Valley when the Affordable Care Act, the website for the Obamacare, was such a mess, didn't work. And Silicon Valley stepped up and said, no, you guys, you can't let these government contractors design these sites. Let us take it over. They fixed it. The U.S. Digital Service was born since. There's actually a great video on the site. They have done a work to help veterans get better care. They've stepped in and rescued websites. Matt Cutts, almost a year ago, told us he can't be on our shows anymore. He was a regular on This Week in Google, one of the early Googlers. He said, "I can't be on your show anymore. He's been on a sabbatical at Google for a while. I'm going to work for the USDS, and it would be a conflict of interest." Little did he know. It would be a conflict of interest for me to be on Twig. And so we haven't heard from him in a while. He posted on January 18th that he's resigning from Google. In fact, resigned at the end of the year last year and is staying on with the U.S. Digital Service and is, as of right now, the interim administrator. First administrator, Mikey Dickerson, is a political appointee, so he stepped down on Inauguration Day, and Matt Cutts is the acting administrator of the U.S. Digital Services.
Does that mean he reports to Trump? How does that work?
Well, that's some an interesting question.
There's some question as to whether the USDS is going to survive the new administration.
Clearly they're lobbying at this point, lobbying strongly to stick around.
They should be.
And I would expect the president to want their help.
I was just on the White House site, and the first thing you see when you load it is
sign up for the newsletter.
Sign up for the newsletter. He is. He's going for it.
He wants that database. It's going to be very valuable.
Yeah.
So we'll see. He says, "When I'm an acting administrator of the U.S. Digital Services, they do a lot of really good work. It's a hit squad. It's the top tech and some really bright minds there.
It's what's needed as well, because as we saw with the medical website, the government had its chance. It screwed the pooch. So send in some techies who know what they're doing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, at this point, it's
gone. When you click it.
Yeah, the link now goes to the new Trump page.
There's no page.
There's no page for the U.S. Digital Services.
They took it down.
You can go to usds.gov, and here's a picture of all the people doing it. But it used to link right through to the White House.
I'm looking at the cached page here, and there is a cached page. Yeah, I guess they must have took down everything that Obama did.
They did.
So you probably shouldn't read
into this. They flipped the switch. I mean, yeah,
they
just changed servers.
They shifted it all to Obama website, whitehouse.com.
Right.
And then the White House.
There's an Obama one?
Yeah, there's a separate one for the Obama White House.
Ah, where does that live?
I think it's ObamaWhiteHouse.com. Let me just check.
That's fascinating.
We have to preserve all this stuff now, don't we?
Yeah.
So,
wonder what CMS they use.
No, it's not. It's
actually
not Obama
preserving
White House.
It is another interesting aspect.
Well,
here.
Rudy Giuliani is Joomla, so I would say just Rudy. Now that he's a cybersecurity czar,
sure, why not?
Just
Joomla.
Hilarious.
Joomla's great.
It's like, let's announce our new stuff.
Not just Joomla, unpatched Joomla.
Yeah. Right. For
2012.
Yeah. I know, you couldn't make that up.
You know, when I started the Twit site, I was looking at content management systems, and I looked at Joomla. And even then, for Twit, I said, no, I'm going to use Drupal. It was like, why would I? Whitehouse.gov used to be Drupal. I don't know if it's still Drupal now. I would guess it's not. How could we tell? We could just look at the CSS, right? You should be able to tell.
Yeah. There's a website. There's a website where you can type in a website and get all their SAC.
Obama White House Archives.gov.
Okay. Right. That would still be running
mentioning things like.
Well, you know what's interesting too is you can set up like a Zapier script or whatever to take anybody or maybe if
you
this pronounce
that. It. What do you
Zapier?
Think it's
Zapier.
How about Zapier?
Le Zapier. You can use Zapier. Tout le monde is très magnifique.
Je suis Zapier.
Ah, le Zapier. Le Zapier. You could use this to take anybody's tweets and then put them into like a Google sheet or email them to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think. It does it the second somebody tweets, so you would have a permanent record of it.
Right.
And then I guess somebody had done the thing where you could show for verified accounts which tweets they deleted in the original tweets or whatever.
Oh,
and then
nice.
I guess Jack convinced them to turn it off or forced them to turn it off. But this would be something that would be well worth us doing.
Still using Drupal on whitehouse.gov.
Well, they probably have to use open source software. Isn't that one of the big moves?
Mm.
I doubt they have to use open source software.
I thought there was
They've been trying to use more open source software as a matter of policy, but they haven't, I don't think, codified it into you must use it.
I think that's one of the things they're trying to codify.
I would have used Joomla if I could have. Mm. That's such a good system.
Six apart. Six movable apart.
Movable type. That's it.
Movable type it.
No, I still see a Drupal code in here, so it's interesting.
But no, there's going to be a lot of clearing out at the White House, and we don't even know
and
what we're going
to
do yet.
That's normal. I mean, you got to give them a couple of months before you can say this is a disaster or it's fantastic.
Matt, when you're done at USTS, we expect a call, and we'd love to get you
Come
on.
Come back, Matt.
Come back, Matt. Love Matt. He's a great guy, and they're doing good work there. And I hope they continue to do it. I think they will. It's a small budget. I think it's a $14
million
budget.
He's a good person. We had differences when he was at Google. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, did he think of you as a spammer by any chance?
No, what happened was, you know, I had a deep relationship with Google. We had made tens of millions of dollars together as a partners, and then they just started changing everything. And then they would sit there and he'd be like, we don't have any penalty against you. But I was like, 80% of the traffic's gone. I was like, yeah, we don't know what happened. And it was just like this constant lying. And I was like, guys, don't lie to me. Just tell me. And they're like, well, we don't have partners. I'm like, do you want me to take the 1,000 partnership emails that we've had over the years and all these lunches I've had over here where you beg me to put AdSense on my site, beg me to put search on my site? Like, what are we talking about here? I just felt like
Drew Curtis is now furious with Google.
They just don't treat partners well. What happened was there was a time in Matt joined where they were very partner-centric and they would have you over Google. They needed content sites. And then, you know, Matt just started lying to me and other people about, like, our status because he had my take on it now is that he had his hands tied, so he couldn't tell the truth. And then he was being deposed, I believe, for all these government things. And so it put him in a very awkward position where he – essentially had to lie to us, and that I didn't.
I know Matt doesn't like doing that. No,
and I think that's part. It became very hard for him. I think to have that job there and with a straight face tell people, we're not destroying you intentionally. We're not changing your stuff. And then like Yelp is getting moved down the page in favor of the listings from
the
Google.
The good news is when you work for the U.S. government, you never have to lie.
No, not at all. Ever.
So
you're never told to lie. You're never told to modify things that you said that were true.
Never.
Google's great strategy was always nobody's in charge. So you'd be like, oh, wow, you hired
it's a Python script that's in charge.
3% of that you hired the smartest 3% of the world and nobody's in charge. Okay, great. That's so totally believable. And then Twitter's big mistake is Jack's like,
I'm in charge.
Oh, you were harassed? I'm in charge. I'll take care of this.
Yeah.
He should just be like, yeah, I don't know who's in charge of that harassment stuff.
Let me get back to you.
Yeah, I'll get back to you. Well, we don't talk about that.
I'll signal you.
Jack is like, yeah, I'm going to talk to, like, Jack's like, I'm going to pick up the phone when a celebrity's being harassed.
Yeah.
So, really, dude? That sounds effective.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Final words, final thoughts coming up in just a second. There's actually a bunch of stories still left around, so feel free to pick the ones you want to talk about. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage. I just read a great article about Quicken Loans.
They were in the New York Times today, weren't they?
Yeah. They call it Rocket Mortgage. It's a completely transparent, trustworthy online process to apply for a mortgage. You don't have to go into a mortgage lender anymore. You don't have to bring paperwork or mail paperwork or fax paperwork. We had it was only 3 years ago. We bought our house and we had to fax them stuff. In fact, crazy. We thought, oh, it'll only take a few weeks. We're going on vacation a month. What? How long could it? We're on the cruise, still doing the paperwork, faxing stuff from a boat. There's a good simple questionnaire you go through. They have sliders that let you choose your rate, choose your term. You have complete control. It's completely transparent. And the key is it's very fast. Mm. Yes, and you can absolutely upload your pay stubs and your bank statements. They don't, you know, it's all digital. It's a completely online approval process. I'm told one of our hosts, I think it was Brad Sams, had a mortgage through Rocket. And he said, now there's that point where you have to sign the loan and you still have to physically sign it. Mm. But they come to you. They send a notary public with all the paperwork and you just sit down. You stay on the couch. You never left the couch. And you just fill out the whole thing. QuickenLoans.com/twit2. That's a new address. And I want you to use that if you will. QuickenLoans.com/twit2. For Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Fast, efficient, transparent. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. QuickenLoans.com/twit2. And this is where you say equal housing. Lender license on 50 states and MLS. I don't do it that way. See, you know, we used to have sponsors who would say, say it as fast as you can. It's like, what are you trying to hide this? I'm going to say it in a normal voice. Equal housing lender. Why would you hide that? Licensed in all 50 states. Why would you hide that? NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030, so you can look it up.
People
find out more.
People expect it. I kind of anticipate that part at the end of every commercial.
QuickenLoans.com/twit2. It actually is great, and it's absolutely how I'm doing it next time. Edward Snowden staying in Russia.
Yeah, and Julian Assange might be booking his ticket if he actually gets the
He's a coward.
Now, Julian Assange promised
twice
that if Chelsea Manning's sentence was commuted, it was. It had to be immediately.
No, he didn't say that in either of those
tweets.
He'll
qualify later.
When he might actually have to follow through.
That guy's not following through on anything.
Is anybody any more surprised when a public figure says one thing than does another thing?
I think we should be outraged, but
it's the biggest loss. People already didn't trust politicians, didn't trust public figures, and now it's just out the window.
We didn't expect them to out and out lie to our faces either.
Well,
and I think just saying, well, we should expect that from politicians is a very, very dangerous route to go down. Because otherwise, what's the point in telling the truth? You know they're supposed to be there to tell the truth.
Bleak in the chat room is correct. He said she has to be immediately, Chelsea has to be immediately pardoned.
She was not pardoned.
No, she wasn't pardoned. Her sentence was commuted.
And it was shortened, but she doesn't get out till May 17th. So is that, those are the weasel words that Assange is using?
She has to be out, and then he'll come.
Oh, so he may still accept. By the way, is all about is he is currently in hiding in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. The reason is he's wanted for questioning in Sweden for rape.
He's for sexual misconduct.
Right, pardon me. Okay.
And he's actually recently started to talk about the details of the case. Supposedly, I don't know how graphic we can get here, but.
Well, that's not germane. In fact,
he
always said, look, they're going to prosecute me because of WikiLeaks. They want to put me away and they'll find any excuse. So I'm not going to presume. I am not going to presume anything, whether he did anything or not. Yeah. It would make perfect sense if, you know, you're the Western governments to see how can we get this guy out of commission. Yeah.
And also Sweden does have a track record in the past they've extradited people to the U.S. without their lawyers even knowing about it until they were on the plane and in the air. So Sweden does have a bit of a record.
Sweden's a very extradition-friendly country.
Yes,
the latest tweet.
But at the same time, he should have just taken this. I mean, hanging out in the Ecuadorian broom closet for the last 5 years has done nothing to sort this out, has just trashed his reputation. The guy needs to stand up and take it on the chin.
Well, he might be. His lawyer says everything that he has said he's standing by. He's prepared to be extradited. The latest tweet on the 18th, Assange still happy to come to the U.S., provided all his rights are guaranteed, despite the White House now saying Manning was not a quid pro quo. Well, we'll see.
Do people think generally about Chelsea Manning being
The argument is she served 7 years, and that is very commonly the length of time for the crime she committed. That the 35, or was it 45?
35 years.
35-year sentence was egregious and overly long.
Sure.
I mean, to be fair, unfair. She did get 112 days knocked off because the judge determined that forcing her to stand upright and naked from 5 a.m. until 10 p.m. every day constituted an unreasonable way to go about things.
So it was a bit of a witch hunt, in other words.
Absolutely.
And so I don't. I think time served is not unreasonable.
Considering David Petraeus got away with a slap on the wrist for doing, you know, for passing over war classified information to his mistress.
Yeah, his girlfriend, yeah. Snowden will stay in Russia for another 3 years.
That's how long he's got on his employment contract with Putin?
You know, I don't
know.
I feel like we don't know anymore anything.
No, it's
like,
how could you know? No.
We know nothing.
He could have been a spy with Putin. He could have been a patriot who is now a spy.
And we may never find out.
Who knows? The truth is impossible to understand
at this
now.
Point, which is depressing to me because I always kind of thought there was a thing called facts.
Yeah.
Well, there are certain facts within this case. Snowden didn't actually release any of these documents himself. He gave them to the press so they could go through them and make sure no one was
which I think was a highly responsible thing to do.
Yes, for sure. Different than WikiLeaks.
Yes, who just pumped everything out there.
Which,
and
by the way, that's what Chelsea Manning did. Yeah. She released all those documents.
Well, she gave them to WikiLeaks.
To WikiLeaks.
Yeah. Knowing he would dump them because that's what they do.
On the other hand, I honor her because of her, we know of that ridiculous drone strike where the drone
Reuters
people are laughing and they killed journalists. Abu Ghraib, there was stuff we learned that I think was in the American interest to learn.
And also, the State Department cables, as Brits, they gave us a huge laugh because who could have guessed that Prince Andrew is a foot-in-the-mouth idiot when it comes to diplomatic relations? You just got to look at his family and you know that they're like that. But, I mean, it's just, there wasn't anything in there, I think, which justified a 35-year sentence. Yeah. Realistically, when you
seems
look
successful.
At whatever. The, yeah.
Okay, that was your story. Explosive diarrhea. not sure how it's related, but okay.
No.
I honestly, the most fun story of the week for me actually came out last weekend, which was ShmooCon, the big security conference. And someone had done some research into hackers taking down the power grid. And compared that to the amount of times the power grid has been taken down by animals. And it turns out it's not hackers, it's not terrorists, it's squirrels you've got to watch out for. So it's rats with good PR that gnaw through cables. I mean, there are 8 deaths in the last 4 years due to animals screwing around with power systems. You know, 3 Sri Lankan soldiers got electrocuted when a squirrel chewed through the power line, got electrocuted, the power line fell onto their van and electrocuted them. It's just there's so much FUD talked about. Oh, the hacker's going to take down the power grid. The hacker's going to do this. And then if you actually look that against 879 squirrel attacks, which have caused power outages, we need to get a refocusing as to what exactly the problem
is. Well, to be fair, the squirrels aren't doing it on purpose.
And we can take it one step further. That all pales in comparison to the multiple thousands of attacks on the power grid we have by Mylar balloons.
Yeah.
Because those.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But. You would all agree also we should probably secure our grid and try to keep some bad guy from taking the power grid down preparatory to an attack on our soil, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not worried about the squirrels invading the United States. They are already here.
I don't know. They're evil little buggers.
Great,
you can't trust them.
A great thing for us to do would be to put the power walls or equivalents, it doesn't have to be Teslas, but in every business and home and have generators.
I'm trying to get one. I'm on the list.
We need to basically.
Can you nudge Elon? Get me my power wall?
I might be able to make a little phone call. It's text.
I'm all in. I got the Solar City panels. I got the Tesla Model X. All I'm needing.
Yeah, when you get that set up. The interesting thing that I think happened this week was the Tesla crash that occurred tragically that killed the Navy SEAL who was a super fan. The results of that investigation came out from the NTSB, right?
Yeah.
And they
the NHTSA.
NHTSA, okay.
Yeah, they're the Highway Traffic Safety.
Highway Traffic and Safety Administration.
And they basically, essentially said this person had 7 seconds and it wasn't Tesla's fault. But
The autopilot was on.
But the person wasn't paying attention.
Using it as an assistive driving
Exactly.
Technology.
The person had abdicated and was doing level 4
which
and 11
tool
device.
Which you're not supposed to do.
But the interesting thing that they found was they looked at since the Tesla was released, the Autopilot was released, it was a 40% drop in crashes. So what's very interesting about connected cars and all the data is that now Tesla can definitively know, hey, we put in Autopilot, what happened to crashes? Oh, we tweaked the software, what happened to crashes? They have a feedback loop that's never existed before. And they're pushing updates, as you know, every couple of months, and a major one every year or year and a half. And already, after auto steer, which is just one of many features, it keeps you in the lane. It is scary how well it keeps you in the lane. It is unbelievably, it's uncanny, and it's only in version 1.0. So I think that they're going to continue to drop 40% a year until we get to the point where people in Teslas just are not getting an accident.
And it's all about data. That's why Intel dropped $250 million in autonomous car technology, because the more data that they can get of the fraction of the terabytes of data that are generated per car per day, that allows them to design a better model for how traffic flows.
And we've only just started to touch on what you can do if you get a sensor-equipped car and a decent sharing of data. It's going to make Waze look like, you know, sort of scribbling on clay
tablets.
Imagine
you had a million drivers in 500 cities.
You can
cities,
monitor traffic in like real
Uber
time.
Does. Yeah. I mean, they have a million drivers in 500 cities or something to that effect, and they just hired the head of Google Search, who had retired, Amit, was retired, and he came out of retirement, and this is a person who doesn't need to work to become...
Sunit, what's his name?
Amit.
Amit Singhal.
Singhal, he came out of retirement. He was giving all his money away.
Well, he had, it's weird because we talked about, you know, his retirement letter. He wanted to spend more time with his family. He was, it looked like he was legitimately just leaving...
He was done.
...the business.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he's now working at Tesla.
Well, and, you know, if you have a big, huge problem like... I'm sorry, at Uber, when you have a big, huge problem like Uber's trying to solve, you know,
I mean, Uber,
it's a draw, you know, and so it's, I think, going to be really interesting how quickly this is going to emerge.
It also solves problem for Tesla because they were sued last week by a South Korean celebrity who claimed that he was coming in to park his Tesla in his house. And it suddenly accelerated and broke through his back wall. And
what, was it his wife driving?
Well, they were able to say, no, actually, we've looked at the telemetry.
No, there was another case where the guy is suing, it sounds like I'm being Henny Youngman here, but no, literally his wife was driving and the guy is suing because his wife had the same experience.
Right.
It turns out they have the data.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You can't lie anymore.
Accelerator pedal went like that.
Do you remember a few years back, there was that was a hit piece on Tesla from a journalist who said, oh, it was terrible. And he didn't know they had the data.
Yeah.
He's like,
It was a New York Times journalist who missed the exit and then counted it against them.
Yeah.
He's like, the range is like 20% off. It's like, because you circled and couldn't find the charging station and got off the wrong exit? Great. That journalist got spanked by the public editor who was like...
Honestly, he should have got fired if he's making up stuff like that. But
Father Robert, your story that we've missed, have you found one?
I didn't know we were doing that.
All right, you haven't done your homework.
What about Silence?
Okay.
What about the Jesuit film Silence by Marty Scorsese?
Is
what
it
do
good?
You say?
Have you seen it?
I saw it when I was in Rome. It was fun
special.
Little crowd. It was Martin Scorsese came over to Rome and he showed it to a bunch of bishops and
priests. All right, as good as The Mission or better?
I love The Mission.
I mean, The Mission has a special place in my heart.
One of my top fives.
Definitely one of my top fives. But
Silence is about a couple of Jesuit priests
in Japan. It's from a
in
book.
In the 17th century.
Yes.
Where the Jesuits are being, all Catholics are being persecuted by the Japanese.
Slaughtered
by the Japanese emperor who wants to get the Christians out of Japan.
The book, it was an incredibly faithful adaptation of the book. But imagine if you could stop the torture, the horrible, horrible torture, by doing something that on the outside seems incredibly insignificant, but you're not willing to sacrifice
personal
integrity. No, just you know, as simply as saying, like saying, hey, Leo, you know what? I'll stop stabbing you in the stomach if you just say no.
Right.
And you decide that that's not worth it. You won't do it. And at the end, you do. And
there's the great moral dilemma.
There's a huge moral dilemma. It's a beautiful story. It's incredibly well done. It's going to do horribly at the theater because it was in the middle of the release.
It's going to clean up at the awards.
It's going to clean up at the awards.
All I want to know is how does the Pope like his popcorn?
He actually doesn't eat popcorn.
Okay.
But he really, really, really likes fruit.
You see, I'm curious
about this.
This
Pope is on a tear, huh?
I'm curious about how you actually viewed this in the Vatican, because a bunch of us sail a lot and a bunch of us went to see the Robert Redford sailing film All Is Lost, and we were just killing ourselves laughing because of the number of basic sailing mistakes he made. Yeah. Is it the same in this film with from watching it from a religious perspective? Just like
he's wearing his chasuble backwards.
Exactly.
Well, no, because remember this was an audience of Jesuits,
right?
And he knew, Martin Scorsese knew it was an audience of Jesuits. That's and you wow. have to remember, one That's of the actors surreal. In this movie was Liam Neeson, who was also in The Mission.
Yeah.
Right.
And
with Jeremy Irons and Robert De Niro.
That's right. And they what got the terminology right. They got the culture more or less right. And mm-hmm. so everything else was just really, really well done storytelling.
Excellent.
That's it.
So go Jesuits. Watch. Yeah, go watch Silence.
The Jesuits. It's like the Jedi of the Christians.
They are. They're the Christian Jedis. I got a couple of stories. Don't install Meitu. I bet everybody was tempted. This is the app that turns you into an anime star.
Not at all.
Yeah. Nope. And lets you put the selfie. It's one of those photo filter apps. Turns out it comes from it had been popular in China for years, but
very data slurpy.
It is data slurpy. It asks for permission to make phone calls on your behalf. It sends your unique device identifier number, call information, IMEI and IMSI, carrier information and Wi-Fi connection information to China, to its server in
What's the worst that could happen?
China. It's basically, here's Jonathan Zdarsky says it, it's a throw together multiple analytics and marketing ad tracking packages with something cute to get people to use it.
Of course. Yeah.
I used to test all apps I would put on my phone by putting it onto my – I have a little honeypot. Mm. And it would just look at all the traffic going out.
Yeah.
And then I found out that they were making some apps aware and they would not send out that information over a Wi-Fi network. They would only do it over the cellular connection, which makes it much more difficult to track it. And I'm thinking – that's deliberate. If I see that, no, stop.
You know what?
Meitu, in its defense, says we have a 450 million unique monthly active users, very popular in China. We take their privacy very seriously. We do not sell user data.
Yeah, that's like McDonald's being like, we have a billion customers. Trust us. We're going to do it. What's in their best interest.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter that you have a lot of people eating.
Mirai botnet. Pies. We have millions of people on our Mirai botnet, and we would never do anything wrong with it.
We have millions of people's information compromised.
We're concerned
Trust
that you're
us.
Selling our information. You don't understand. We just really want to.
It's also like if I went into my iPhone settings for location usage, which I keep off by default. Mm-hmm. I only turn it on when I have to use it. And I was just amazed by how many apps that have absolutely no reason to know to be on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to turn them off, and it doesn't have only when I'm using the app.
Do you turn off individual location permission for Uber every
Definitely.
Time? Yeah, mine's because I keep my location on, but I disable it for that app unless I'm calling an Uber.
Yeah, I can.
Why?
Because they track it.
Yeah, they do.
Collect it.
They track it for. They just started tracking for 30 seconds after you got out to figure out if you're getting out here. Are you going to this other building? Which and maybe they didn't communicate perfectly, but. Yeah, listen, I'm on the inside of a lot of these companies. Like, they usually don't have nefarious intent.
Right.
No.
But what happens with I'll tell you the one exception to that, which is the people who have advertising-based businesses.
Right.
Mm.
Because they do have nefarious content. They want to know everything about you, and they're outing gay people and other things. By knowing stuff about you, they can basically predict and then sell you to people. And those are the people, whether it's Facebook or Google, they really don't have your best interests at heart.
It seems to be a great place for me to do another ad. But I don't know anything about you.
It's not like everybody listening is having their MAC address sent to.
No.
We do. We're overstepping. We have to pull that industry back.
That's why I like our model. Yeah. We don't know anything about you. And we don't. And I always worry because there's always a move among the podcasters and more among the advertising bureau to somehow track podcast listeners with special apps and stuff. And it always scares me. I don't want to see ad tech.
That's Apple's, I guess, great position is, hey, listen, we make enough off the hardware, we don't need to be up in your business.
Mm-hmm.
And if your phone becomes part of some government investigation, we're not going to let them crack it.
And I'm okay with selling a little bit of my privacy for some convenience. Like with the Uber app, I completely believe it's not for nefarious reasons. Yeah. I'm sure that information does come in handy. It helps them to build a better product.
They want you to take more Ubers.
But the agreement was you can use this information for this particular thing.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm selling to you. If you want more, you have to give me something else. It's a contract here.
You see, this is one of the things I like about Android is that when you download the app, you do get that warning screen saying,
unfortunately, so many people, they just hit...
Yes, fine.
It's the Eula problem from the Windows days.
I was at the Women's March yesterday, and it was a candlelit march down Market Street, and I didn't bring a candle. So I thought, okay, I'm in San Francisco, get the candle app. First Candle app I tried to download, it wanted my phone location, my contacts, my GPS location. You're like,
please
it's
give
an
us
animated
your
picture
number.
Of a candle. Why on earth would I give you this?
So, yeah, take a guess.
Cancel.
Our last story, actually just breaking now, is that United Airlines has grounded all domestic flights. Apparently, due to a computer outage, U.S. officials told NBC News that the Aircraft Communications Addressing and Reporting System, or ACARS, was having issues with low bandwidth.
Ooh.
No further explanation immediately available.
That's like the, what was the Millennium fear?
Y2K.
It's Y2K. Don't worry about it.
It's Y2K?
Y2K, just because
I mean, that's not the internet. That's a private data link system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's hope it's just something broke.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
it's squirrels.
Well, I mean, if it's just one
it's
airline.
Probably squirrels. It's,
yeah. I'm going to guess
pigeons. Yeah.
It's squirrels.
I have my money on Mylar. A pigeon holding a squirrel holding a Mylar balloon. Yeah.
So if you have family or friends arriving on United in the United States
they're
going to
be even more annoyed than they usually will be.
They're going to be cranky when they get here.
I'll give everybody
tomorrow.
A great life hack. Some airlines, as you know, allow you to get a full refund, like Southwest and Virgin, or a credit. So if you're a business travel going in and out of San Francisco or any of these places, I always book two flights, you know, back to back or from Oakland and San Francisco, because the system is so screwed up here in the Bay Area and LA and New York that it's like, I don't know if it's a quarter of all flights or 20% of all flights get delayed or changed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have two flights, all you do is you just refund the one that you're not going to take and you get a credit or you get a full refund. It's worked out brilliantly for me.
I just fly Delta because they always upgrade me.
That's nice.
I like that.
Do they see the
I got used to the warm cookie that they give you when
how
you
do they,
land.
How do you upgrade first class? I don't understand, Padre.
I've flown so many miles.
What are you talking about?
You don't know about the special room.
Wait a second.
There's a special room.
Well, I used to be an aviation journalist, and there is on transoceanic flights,
yes.
There is actually a special cabin
up above.
Up above in the ceiling, yeah. For crews.
I got into that on the way back from Rome.
Really?
They let me up there. That thing is incredible.
What?
It's a special place.
It's like the
no
hole in a plane.
Yeah, it's like the no loft in an airplane.
And I would say, having spoken to a lot of cabin crew, no matter what you might read in Penthouse, you are not invited up there for naughty time.
Yes,
it just never
it's
happens.
For sleeping. Everyone up there is sleeping.
Yeah, I'm guessing though, based on my knowledge,
if naughty times possible,
I'm going to guess there's been some shenanigans.
Knowing
people, yes, but amongst cabin crew, not amongst passengers.
Yeah, I think the cabin crew has had some good times.
We have dragged this show out long enough to have actually had Samsung's press conference.
Yes.
Oh, really?
In related news.
And in fact, the Wall Street Journal's guess was correct. The first battery, there were two separate battery defects.
Oh, no.
The first batch suffered from a design flaw. The external casing was too small for the components inside. So this is not the phone, but the battery casing itself.
The belt was too tight.
The belt was too tight, causing it to short circuit and ignite. Then the replacement battery, which came from another supplier, didn't have that problem. But in the rush to pump out enough batteries for the replacement units, they introduced a manufacturing defect that ended up doing the same thing.
Oh, good grief.
So there were really two different problems.
Hmm.
And remember, Samsung quickly moved to replace them, rushed replacements out within a week or two.
Yeah.
And those replacements then caught on fire.
Yeah, that was great.
That was
the kiss of death.
Well, and then when you got on your Southwest flight, they said, does anybody have a Galaxy S7? If so, the pilot would like to speak to you. Like, literally, that's how they said it on one flight. I was like, wow, what a great ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
If you have an S7, please come to the front of the plane to be admonished by the pilot.
There was a panic on one flight because
they put up the Wi-Fi router.
Yeah, their Wi-Fi router was down as a Galaxy.
The guy got arrested.
The guy actually said to the cabin crew, just like, you need to see this. Somebody's got one. And they just threatened to.
He created a Wi-Fi access point called Galaxy Note 7. They figured out who it was. They arrested him for bomb threat.
Yeah.
How did they figure out who it was? Just turn off your phone, idiot.
Yeah, I know, but this guy really wasn't it. I just
stupid people.
He probably stood up and said, that was me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were threatening to land the plane in Nebraska and strip search everyone. I mean,
really?
I mean, they were that serious about it.
Although, look,
because a lot of pilots, the worst fear you have is an in-flight fire. I mean, barring a sudden reduction in the number of wings or an explosive loss of cabin pressure. But, I mean, the really big one is a fire.
Wing reduction is definitely above the fire.
No hole. Because if you've got to get down 30,000 feet in a hurry and you've got a fire on board, you're toast. quite literally, but yeah. I mean, it's that's their big fear, and that's why they've been so keen to make sure that none of these phones get on.
Samsung has a process to eliminate this in future. The first battery, they would have actually had to do an X-ray to find the problem. The second battery would have required disassembly. None of those steps are part of the normal testing process, but they have created now an 8-point battery safety check that will prevent the problems going forward. So they're taking it very seriously.
Well, yeah, I mean, a couple of $1 billion loss will do that.
Yeah. So they say we're going well above and beyond the industry standard with the future Galaxy S8. Here's the test. Folks, we've gone way over time, but I don't want to ever stop when I have a panel like this.
Good times.
Father Robert Ballas here. We'll catch you on Twiet and Know How. And anything else you want to share with the world? Are you going to do a new podcast?
We're working on a little something, and I've got I really shouldn't say it. We're working on getting a geek icon to actually be part of the Twit network.
Oh, really?
Yes. Who geeks and sci-fi fans will love and know immediately.
Do I know about this?
No.
I said Will Wheaton. He looked at his shoes.
No. Will Wheaton has, by the way, Will Wheaton did just get an asteroid named after him. So that's
Before Shatner.
Before Shatner.
Shatner
is on fire about it.
Wait a minute.
Because George Takei
and
Will Wheaton.
This ensign beats ensign the captain? Beats captain?
It's because people want to troll him because he's been such a colossal.
He's been kind of a tool.
Yeah.
Who, Shatner?
Yeah, he's known as a D-bag.
Yeah.
Oh, I think he's a great
everybody
guy.
Who has,
George Takei and everybody had a major falling out.
Just like, oh God, he's just so insufferable.
Every once in a while, their Twitter paths cross, and you can just it's very entertaining.
You can see that happen.
Well, did you ever see Galaxy Quest? Like,
yeah,
I love Galaxy Quest.
It's one of my favorite films.
Supposedly. Love it.
Oh, without Rickman?
Well, and the idea, I know that'd be sad. The idea was, you know, he would screw it up for everybody when these guys want to go make money at these conventions, like.
Mm-hmm. You know, you'd think if Shatner was a pain in the ass, he'd be a great asteroid. He'd be a pain in the asteroid. I don't know. My friends.
In the sky.
That's a diamond. God. Picture yourself on a boat. On a river. That is Jason Calacanis, the man of a thousand voices.
Skies.
And you can catch his work at inside.com. He's at Jason on the Twitter.
There you go.
The best handle.
As good as it gets.
Ian Thompson has an inscrutable handle because they spells his name unaccountably the Scottish way. I-A-I-N Thompson.
I've had words with my parents about this. There's not a lot I can do about it at this stage.
You know, as an adult, you can change your name.
I know, but it seems a bit petty and it would make Christmas very awkward.
It would. Casey the Asteroid's not a bad name. Explosive Diary is pretty good, too.
Somehow I don't think the Reg is going to be really happy if I sign my articles off by Explosive Diary.
No, I'm talking about the show name.
Right.
Bangers and
Before
Mash.
Before we go, though.
Bangers and Mash.
I would love to have you read the inaugural poem written for Donald Trump by a Scotsman.
Oh, no.
I saw this.
Oh, yeah. Can you speak that in Scots?
You've heard my accent. I'm about as Scottish as the Duke of Edinburgh.
Well, maybe I should do it. Come out for the Domhnall, ye brave men and proud, the scion of Torquil and the best of MacLeod. With purpose and strength, he came down from his tower to snatch from a tyrant his ill-gotten power. Don't you think it's good?
It's pretty good. Well, you know what? The alternate. But we can understand what you're saying.
Oh.
So now the cry has gone up with a cheer from the crowd.
That's better.
Come out for a Domhnall, the best of MacLeod, when freedom is threatened by...
I got a little spit on the surface.
When
not
freedom is threatened by slavery's chains and voices are silenced as misery reigns.
Am I doing okay? Is that terrible?
The misery
is that
reigns.
Terrible, Ian? Is that worst?
It's not as bad. I did like
it. It sounds a little like Shrek.
I thought that you guys have adopted English in Scotland.
Well, yes, but it's... you see, Donald Trump's not very popular in Scotland because basically he's...
well, apparently his mother was
They've
Scot.
They've got some great...
So that's
incompressible jizz trumpet was my famous word to describe him.
Yeah. I mean, it's just,
he is not popular in Scotland.
They had an alternate poet. And it was going to start something like, there once was a president from Nantucket.
No.
Find it.
Yeah. Mm. spit on the surface.
That's going to end well.
Please don't spit on the surface.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think I've plugged everyone. I think I've thanked you all. Galore. I will remind you, we are doing our Twit survey. We do this once a year. We don't collect personal information about you. It helps us tune the programming and let the advertisers know who's listening.
Anonymously.
It's very easy. Yeah, this is far better than the kind of stuff that all other people do. We're not trying to get information about you personally. twit.tv/survey. It will only take a couple of minutes. We've shortened it considerably as well. It helps to know what the demographics are.
Yeah. What do you plan on buying in the next year?
Yeah, that kind of thing. And it also helps us with planning for the shows, because apparently Father Robert has plans I didn't even know about.
Absolutely. William plans Shatner.
The dog's bollocks.
If one of the questions is, who's your favorite science fiction character?
One of my favorite science fiction character. Recent science fiction character. Who is one of your favorites?
No guessing. I don't want to know.
Recent sci-fi character. Is it female or male?
Male.
Get up and walk ye free, all ye brave men and proud.
Recent.
Brave.
Robbed of your manhood, of no, might, that you might lay down and die.
TV or film?
Yes.
Another twit.
Wow.
Is in the can. Thank you, everybody.
Nicely done.
This show's gone on for so long that the chat room is now suggesting.
So bad. It is unbelievable.
They're now suggesting stories that we did at the beginning of the show. Hey, did you do the story on Ian McKellen? Yes, we did.